This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile into the end zone. Boy, cuts to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Welcome, everybody, to One Bills Drive on this Victory Monday. Hello there. Welcome to the show. John Murphy, along with my broadcast partner, Donald Jones, here for the next 3 hours to talk some Bills football with you, and a good day to talk about it after that win over the Denver Broncos yesterday. That's what we're here for, to discuss that. And you, of course, are welcome to join us. The phone lines open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550 or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Clearly, Donald, best win of the season for the Bills and a surprising one. I did not see that one coming, I have to confess.
Yeah, I didn't see that one coming either. And if you would have told me that they would have won with LeSean McCoy having, 21 yards on the ground, with your leading receiver going for 61 yards, I would have been like, you're a fool if you think they could win with that type of formula. And they ended up getting it done, you know. And the one thing that they did do was what they didn't do last week, and that was create turnovers, you know. And that truly, truly helped out in the win. But, you know, overall good team win. Special teams came to play. It was a good game. It was entertaining.
It really was. I thought it was wildly entertaining with, you know, the lead changes, three of them by my count, and the Bills never really had a safe lead until that, you know, really till the final interception. And I think it was, as you said, a team win and a complete win. And, you know, I go in the locker room afterwards yesterday and trying to put together a video piece for our website, Bills Focus on BuffaloBills.com. And trying to, kind of in the heat of the battle, sort through what went on there. And I came up with the team victory, you know. The offense was interesting. And we're going to dive into this because it's not the typical Buffalo offense that we've become used to the last few years. They did not run well and still moved the ball pretty effectively. The defense was solid. That's been the constant, right? It's the Buffalo defense that's allowed 2 touchdowns in 3 games played. That's ridiculous. An amazing turnaround for the Buffalo defense. And the special teams contributions were very meaningful. Hauschka was outstanding with the long field goals. None of them really in doubt. I had questions about Hauschka, his first 2 field goal attempts this year.
A miss.
And then, you know, banged one in off the upright in Carolina last week. And then he goes out there and drills 3 of them. I talked to him after the game about that. We'll hear those comments. He said the conditions had a lot to do with it, you know, nice soft ball with the heat down there and on the field at the New Era Field. But the special teams contributions were huge, including that big stop on the fake punt that that the Broncos ran. And look, the Broncos were a quality opponent. I'd still believe they're a pretty good team, probably a playoff team in a very competitive AFC West. And, you know, Simeon played okay, not great. The Bills got to him enough and forced him into a couple of key mistakes. Von Miller had his plays, but he didn't wreck the game as he's capable of doing. I thought it was a great game to watch, and I thought it really was a solid win. Maybe one of the best wins this franchise has had in a couple of years.
Yeah, it was definitely a solid win. You talked about Von Miller, and, you know, Von Miller shocked Deion Dawkins in the second play of the game. You know, and Deion, I watched him the next play, and it was like a wake-up call into the NFL, you know. And the next play, he was like, all right, that won't happen again, you know. And he did a good job for the most part against Von Miller all day. I think on the defensive side of the ball, like you said, Trevor Siemian in the first half of the game, he was able to distribute the ball around to guys. He was finding open guys. We had some confusion on our defense by Tre'Davious White and a couple of guys, especially in the back end of the defense. And he was finding those guys, you know. And I think the front seven did a very good job, especially in the second half, of getting to Trevor Siemian often enough where he just didn't look comfortable at all anymore in the pocket. He always had to roll to his right or to his left and try to make throws. And once they got him off that mark, he wasn't hitting guys anymore, you know. And so the front seven, they ended up with three sacks yesterday, which is a very good game by your defense. It's not 6 sacks from last week, but that is a good game. But the biggest thing was they consistently got pressure on him, you know, to flush him out of the pocket. And that ended up being huge because they are a quality opponent on offense and defense. They are a true quality opponent, and they will contend in that AFC West. They have a huge game coming up against the Raiders. And for the Bills to be able to do what they did yesterday was a good win.
I want to ask you about the one thing that Denver did, and you mentioned it, how the secondary, in particular Tre'Davious White, had issues early on with kind of a cluster formation, right?
Yeah.
A bunch formation, three receivers. And from listening to Markelso over the years, I know what that does right at the snap.
Yeah.
It creates separation, and you know, you have to pick a man and stay with that man. But what do you think why did that give White early trouble in the game, and what, if anything, did they do to adjust to that to maybe handle it better moving along?
And, you know, it can give you trouble, especially if they've never done it. And I don't know if they did it as much in the past.
But I asked Kelso. He said, yeah, he saw it on tape, but I didn't see it as much as they used it yesterday.
Right, exactly. You know, and what it does is, and offensive coordinators will tell you this, you motion guys and you get guys in a bunch of formations to get the defense confused, you know, and then you start to release in all types of different ways. And sometimes they let guys come open, you know, and it creates that confusion. I don't know what was going on with Tre'Davious and everyone else. The big play to Emmanuel Sanders, you could see right before the play that Tre'Davious was confused. You could see it. He was trying to figure out what are we doing here. And then all of a sudden, Emmanuel Sanders is down the field wide open. The biggest part of that was Tre'Davious caught up and poked the ball out. So that was a good job by him. But, yeah, when you get into those bunch and those cluster formations, it confuses because they have to figure out, are we man here? Are we boxing this? Like, who do
right.
I have here?
Right.
You know, and that slight hesitation, and you'll come wide open.
It was another solid day for the Buffalo defense, and one of the guys who played a big role in that is on set with us right now. He is in his second year, Bills defensive tackle, Adolphus Washington, who got 34 snaps, about half the defensive snaps yesterday. Adolphus, thanks very much for coming by here. We appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
That's a pretty heavy workload for you, but you're getting used to that with the rotation that's going on and with, obviously, Marcel Darius out yesterday, huh?
Yeah, definitely getting used to that. You know, looking to, you know, add more reps on if that need be. With Marcel being down, so, you know, I'm just here to, you know, make up for whatever we lacking in.
What was that like in the heat, all that play?
I was just about to ask you.
Yeah.
I mean, it was hot, you know, don't get me wrong, but that Carolina heat, that was a little different. So
more humid?
Yeah, yesterday wasn't – it was bad, but it wasn't as bad as Carolina, yeah.
Because that was hot yesterday.
Yeah, it was hot. It was hot, but I guess it was probably just me, but that Carolina heat was just different to me.
What'd you guys do – especially in the second half, to really start putting pressure? It seemed like the first half and the second half was a little bit different, and you guys consistently got pressure on Trevor Siemian in the second half.
Yeah, you know, we kind of, you know, realized what he was trying to do. If he didn't get his first read, he was pretty much taking off and running. So, you know, we sent pressure after him a little bit because, you know, he's mobile enough to get away, mm-hmm. but if you send somebody after him, then, you know, it's a little – He's a little cluster. So.
Right.
He made a couple of plays on the run, just as he did in, I think, the San Diego game a couple of weeks ago, but nothing that really damaged you. And the pressure forced him into making some tough throws that came up with interceptions, which is kind of what you guys are looking for, right?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we go over on a daily basis how big turnovers are. And, you know, one or two turnovers can, you know, determine, you know, a good outcome or a bad outcome of the game.
Yesterday you guys had 3 sacks, and, you know, last week you had 6, and everybody's like, man, 6 sacks, that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
So people will probably look at 3 sacks like, oh, they didn't get as many sacks as, you know, but it's not always about sacks.
It's
about really just consistently getting pressure on the quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I agree with that. To get pressure on the quarterback, you know, could be just as good as a sack. Because like you said, you see Tre'Davious White mm-hmm. came up with the interception, you know, from the pressure. So, you know, it's – pressure in a sack is kind of, you know, the same thing. You can get good results from both of them.
With the Dolphins, Washington Bills defensive tackle who came up with a couple of notable plays, including a tackle for a loss. Talk about that play, what you saw there and how you're able to make that play.
You know, I don't know if it was – yeah, last week I kind of didn't, you know, fully attack when they ran, you know, their draw last week. And, you know, I seen the opportunity, and, you know, I just took advantage of it. You know, that's just come along with just feeling the game. So, you know, I was feeling good at that time, and, you know, I kind of just took my shot.
It was first and 20, I believe, mm-hmm. deep in their own territory, 15-yard mm-hmm. line. Do you look at down and distance and say, I think there's a draw coming here?
Or? Definitely. You know, when teams are backed up like that, you know, it's either going to be, you know, screen, draw, mm-hmm. or, you know, probably a shot down the field, so.
You guys are probably used to it with LeSean McCoy and Mike Tolbert here, but what was it like in a game setting having to play against Anderson, and then when Charles would come in the game, they were two totally different backs. What was it like? What's it really like facing backs like that are two totally different
people? I mean, that's kind of just like last week when we played Carolina. You know, you had Stewart that was the power back, and then McCaffrey that was the fast guy. So, you know, it's kind of like we didn't have to really make a big adjustment there because they were pretty much the same backfield that we faced last week.
When you see – I don't know if you guys pay attention to this, but I know on defense you pay attention to the personnel that's coming in. Mm-hmm. Do you look at that, who's in the backfield? All right, this is the faster guy. Let me get ready for that.
Definitely, yeah. You have to look at things like that because it gives you a key on what type of runs you're going to get. You know, Jamal Charles is a very good running back, but, you know, he's kind of older. He doesn't – you know, they don't really make him run in between the tackles. They send him more outside. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that kind of gives you a good idea what type of run, what kind of blocking scheme you're going to get being a D lineman.
Mm-hmm. Jamal Charles has had such a great career. He's in his 10th year, though, and you don't – maybe you just look at the numbers and don't expect much, but, man, there were a couple times in this game yesterday and even in their previous games when you can see – when that guy's
still
used,
fast.
He's going to make plays. He's going to make plays down the road here.
Definitely. You know, we just have to try our best to contain, you know, those type of guys because, like you said, he's fast. So, you know, try to keep the leverage of the defense. Don't let him get outside and get the corner.
We're with the Dolphins Washington Bills defensive tackle following yesterday's win over the Denver Broncos. The officiating was a little bit sketchy, I thought, yesterday. And in particular, one play, they got you for illegal use of hands.
Yeah.
Don't get fined.
Right.
But it just didn't seem like it met the standard of what you normally see with an illegal use of hands here.
Yeah, I mean, my hands never touched his face. You know, my hands were actually in his throat, which is, you know, legal. And I even asked him after the play, like, did I put my hands in your face? He told me no, so I'm like, all right, whatever. Let's just move on to the next play.
You asked the offensive lineman?
Yeah, I asked. Yeah, I asked him. He said no. I'm like, all right, let's just move on to the next play then.
It's the worst when you get a big penalty called against you, and you know you didn't do it, but then when you ask the guy that you were going against, he's like, yo, that was a bad call.
Exactly.
Like, man, what?
That's exactly how it was. I was so upset.
You know, there were a couple of calls, and not the – you know, to carp about officiating. The Bills won, so I guess we shouldn't talk about it at all. But it seems to me that play, there was a hold on Richie Incognito. They call penalties when they think it looks like, in your case, it looked kind of like illegal hands to the face. Richie got called for a hold. I don't think he held the guy. His arm was extended. That's why they tell guys to keep their arms inside
when
the frame.
Pulling around?
Yeah. But they call penalties when they think, I think that kind of looks like holding. Well, it's not. Or in your case, you know, it's not. That drives me crazy. See the penalty. Call the penalty.
It definitely drives you crazy, especially, you know, when the defense has momentum and, you know, then I come in and, you know, get a stupid penalty like that caught on me. You know, that makes me very upset, you know, but it makes me just want to go out there and make up for it. That's how I think about it.
How did they handle it? Have you guys done film review yet today?
No, not yet.
How will that be handled in your meeting room today? What will, you know, Mike Waffle say? What?
We'll see. We just gotta wait and see.
I mean, will they blame you? Will they say, hey, next time don't do that? Or I know they're going to call it tight. I don't know how they would handle that. I don't know what I would do if I were the coach.
To be honest, Coach Waffle's a real guy. He'll let you know. Like when I got the holding call, the defensive holding against the Jets a couple weeks ago, I didn't think I did it, but he came to me like, yeah, you did. It didn't look like you did in the game, but you did. You know, once you slow it down and look at it, you did hold him. And I just got to see what he say because I really don't think the player even told me I didn't do it. So, you know, I just got to wait to see what he says.
He's probably going to say next time just try not to get your hands up in his throat.
Yeah.
Because you put it in that gray area where the ref is like, you know what, it's too close. I'm going to just throw the play.
Yeah.
It's tough to watch. We're with the Dolphins Washington Bills defensive tackle as he takes a break before they head into the meeting room in a couple of minutes here. Hey, Dolphins, three games, two touchdowns allowed. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's lights out defense. You're the best defense as far as points allowed in the NFL through the first 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. You could do a lot of things if this defensive production keeps up, I would think.
Definitely, yeah. You know, Coach Leslie and the rest of the defensive staff, you know, they harp on, you know, getting stops and limiting teams to field goals. So, you know, the defense, we take big pride in that, and we try to go out there and do that every series.
You know, I was asked a question this morning on another show, and it was they asked me, what's it like when you get a big win? How is it – like, how do you stay on an even keel? And so for you guys as a defense, when you hear in terms of points allowed, you are the number one defense in the league right now. How do you stay on an even keel knowing that you got a good – I guess a better opponent coming up this week?
Yeah, right. I mean, just staying hungry. Everybody, you know, keeps each other in line and check. especially with a guy like Kyle Williams, you know, with the leader of the defense. He's not going to let anybody, you know, get the big head. You know, everybody really rallies around him. Everybody looks to him for that leadership. So if we see Kyle not doing that, then nobody else is going to do it, trust me.
Yeah, and now here comes Atlanta, fifth in the league in points scored so far this season. The, mm-hmm. the Falcons are going to be home, and the Falcons have scored, by my count, almost 30 points per game mm-hmm. in their first few games, a little bit less than 30 points per game. So that ranking will be challenged this week against a pretty high-powered offense. In the
definitely,
Falcons,
definitely. You know, we just got to go to work. You know, I want to say the Broncos were the number one rushing mm-hmm. offense coming in. You
yep.
know, so we just got to step up to the challenge and, you know, put our best foot forward.
Best of luck to you. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us here today. We appreciate it.
Definitely. I appreciate you guys for having me.
Adolphus Washington, Bills defensive tackle, joining us in studio in the locker room yesterday. Another one of those leaders on the defense, Lorenzo Alexander, talked about the defense and how they finally got takeaways in yesterday's game.
Mm-hmm. I must take this way, give up an extra yard, but the biggest thing for us was the turnovers. We made the big turnovers when we needed at the end of the game. Trey and I think it was EJ. They got the interceptions to kind of shut them down then, gave our offense a couple more tries to drive the field because their defense is dominant and was able to make it a two-score game at the end for us.
How nice was it to kind of get that support from the offense? You know, you guys get the ball back for them, and, you know, they spent the last 13 of the game there.
It's huge. I mean, it gives us the time to breathe, especially me because I'm covering punts too. So anytime they're able to move the ball, I'm very appreciative of it. Give me, you know, 6 or 7 plays off before I go back out there. But it's good, especially when it's hot like this. It's hot last week. These are grinder-type games. But for them to be able to move the ball definitely helped the defense.
I find it ironic that, you know, on a day where you guys wanted to kind of show some unity mm-hmm. at the outset, that it pretty much was a unified effort to get this win today, whether it's Hauschka kicking bombs or, you know, you guys getting takeaways or the offense putting up points.
It's huge. I mean, this is something that, you know, Sean says, you know, every season there's something that's going to happen that's either going to tear a team apart or bring them close together. And I think today we definitely came together, and you can see it the way we played. Special teams, defense, and offense really having each other's back, being accountable, and just loving each other on the sideline. And we had mistakes out there, but we never got on each other. There was never like, what's going on? It's all about how can we get better, communicating, encouraging, and being constructive and trying to get better, on especially on the defensive side. We had gave up a couple of deep balls.
Lorenzo Alexander talking to Chris Brown in the locker room yesterday. Let me say this, Donald. We really like Lorenzo. He's in here every Friday, does a great job. He is the voice of reason in that locker room. We're going to play some comments that he made yesterday about the pregame, about the anthem protest yesterday. Mm-hmm. Put all that aside.
He's playing well.
He's balling, as you would say. Yeah. He's balling out.
He's
unbelievable, the plays he's making.
I'm telling you, it's crazy.
He's playing better than he did a year ago, I think. He really is.
You know, his diet and everything is showing, like his approach to the game, everything that he has done in the offseason and everything he does the week leading up to the game is showing out there on the field. He is flying all over the field, making plays in the backfield, tackling guys downfield. I mean, it's amazing. He's still running down on special teams, making plays as well. You know, it's amazing to see him at, 34 years old in, you know, almost 90-degree weather, run down the field and make plays the way he is. He is playing amazing right now.
41 defensive snaps for Lorenzo yesterday, 59% of the defensive snaps, and 13 snaps on special teams. So that 34-year-old guy played, is my math right here, 72 snaps defense and special teams yesterday? And he's effective. I mean,
it's not like he's just out there.
He's playing better than he's ever played.
He had a sack yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, it's – Lorenzo is playing good. The defense, those guys are really all over the field, you know, and you have the young guys who are going through, you know, their lumps, their bumps and bruises, and then they're bouncing back. They're not letting that get to them, and they're learning from these older guys like Lorenzo and Kyle and the rest of those guys, the veterans on that defense. The defense is playing well, and anytime you have a defense ranked right now, 3 weeks into the season, the number one ranked defense in terms of points allowed, you're going to win some games. They're at least going to keep you around. All you need is your offense to score some points, you know, and that's what happened yesterday.
All right, there's an awful lot to chew on from this game yesterday, and we want to chew it over with you. Let us know what you think about the Bills' win over the Broncos. What was your biggest takeaway from Sunday's win? That's what we want to talk about on the telephone lines at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550. The line's open right now. Or you can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show. We got a Twitter poll up. And that's a simple question. What was your biggest takeaway from the Bills' victory over the Denver Broncos yesterday? It's a pretty close vote so far on Twitter. Defensive turnovers, the takeaways, 43% of you say that's the biggest takeaway, no pun intended. I'm sorry, 41% say that's the biggest takeaway from yesterday's win over the Broncos. 45% say the emergence of the passing game was your biggest takeaway from the game. 7% say special teams. 7% of you say something else. We've got about 500 votes in so far. Let us know what you think. What was your biggest takeaway from the Bills' win over the Broncos? There's a lot going right for the Bills yesterday, and we're going to talk about them, those things, and the pluses and minuses, Donald and I. And we will get, eventually, in the next couple of minutes here, we will get to the pregame anthem protest. But give us a call about the game right now. 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-552-550. What did you take away from that Buffalo victory yesterday? 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Donald, what did you like about the Buffalo Bills victory? Let's get to what we liked. Yeah, let's do likes and dislikes here. We got a few minutes for that. What did you like first?
So the first thing that I liked, Steven Hauschka yesterday, he played well. And you talked about this a little while ago. Coming into the game, you know, we were a little worried about Hauschka because of him missing a field goal. And then last week with him doinking it, he made it, but it was, you know, it was right inside. And then yesterday to hit a couple of bombs, you know, and those balls be right down the middle of that thing. It was – he looked good yesterday. He gave me some confidence in him and this kicking game. You know, I like him. I think he's going to be good for this team. I think last year, you know, we would always be worried, like, oh, is this going to be a make or a miss? If he can play like he did yesterday, he's going to score a lot of points for this team. You know, if he has to continue to kick four field goals a game and that's winning us games, it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, the field goals were great. The extra points were solid. The kickoffs were good. And when he needed to drill it back into the end zone, I thought for the most part he did that. Steven Hauschka, Donald liked that a lot. Let me get to one of the things I liked, and I liked a lot about yesterday. I liked the way Rick Dennison called the game. I liked what they had in mind. I mean, they employed Kalen Clay as a receiver really for the first time. He got some special teams work and a couple of snaps in the game at Carolina a week ago. But Kalen Clay was a part of their offense, and I thought made big plays, including that 28-yard pass over the middle. He represents really the main speed dimension they have. He got in on 15 offensive plays yesterday, and that was on display, and Dennison took advantage of that. Clearly, coming out of the Carolina game, they knew that they had to change things up on defense, right? They knew that they needed – or on offense. They knew that they had to open up things a little bit, try to give the running game more room. The running game never responded really yesterday, but I think the shots downfield were good. They were well-timed. I think some of the goal line plays were outstanding, including the pass to Charles Clay. But all of it, really. I thought Rick Dennison, who you know, probably wishes he had a lot of calls back from the Carolina game, I thought he called a good game yesterday. They had a good design offensively with more shots downfield. Shots over the middle, you know, supposedly Tyrod Taylor's weakness, but he found Jordan Matthews over the middle. He found Kalen Clay over the middle. He found Charles Clay down in the end zone on what was a really nice touchdown play. I thought overall he called a good game. And even, you know, did they get lucky on the Andre Holmes touchdown? Sure they did, off Zay Jones' hands. But Holmes was right there to make the catch.
You know, you remember Steve Tasker was on there and he said, good teams get lucky sometimes, you know. And when you're calling a good game and you're making plays, you're moving the ball down the field, hey, sometimes you do get lucky. And yesterday, was it luck? Yeah, it bounced right into his hands. But, hey, it happens and you'll take that luck if it ends up in a win. You know, you'll take that. Any team will take that. For the most part, and I say for the most part because we're going to get into this in a second. For the most part, in my opinion, yeah, he called a good game. He was creative. This was the things that they were running yesterday is what I think this offense will run the entire season, the rest of the season. You're running some spread. You're running Tyrod out of the shotgun with Shady standing next to him. You run some play action. You still run your zone. You run some play action with Tyrod rolling out those deep crossing routes and overs and things like that. I think that's what we're going to see from the receivers, from the tight ends, and everybody who was catching balls down the field. They're moving guys around. I think he was creative, and I think he did a good job.
Play that will stick with me for a while is the 31-yard pass to Nick O'Leary for a variety of reasons. First of all, they had three tight ends in the game at that point. Yeah. Logan Thomas was out there. Mm-hmm. And they're loaded up on first down, I think fairly deep in their own territory, loaded up, you would think, to run the ball, as they, you know, they have the reputation of this conservative offense. But no, it was a play action. It was a bootleg to the left by Tyrod, rolling to his left. Hard to throw, we all know that. Fires a really strong pass, 30 yards downfield, to Nick O'Leary, who makes an outstanding diving catch, getting his knee down before he goes out of bounds. Maybe the play of the game. That was a four-play scoring drive, and that first play, I thought, ignited it. And it was a good, it was a great design to have the three tight ends and throw a, you know, pass off a bootleg like that. And great execution by Tyrod Taylor and Nick O'Leary on the other end. That might have been my favorite play of the game.
I'm telling you, these are the things that this offense is going to have to do moving on. They will have to mix it up. Personnels, mix up formations, everything. You go with three tight ends, spread them out. You know, spread out those tight ends. Like, they have to do that. They have to mix different things up. I think that play sticks out in my mind because Tyrod had already missed Zay Jones wide open. Mm-hmm. The same type of play. He's rolling to his left, and he overthrows Zay Jones, you know. So that one, I actually thought he had missed Nick O'Leary as well, and Nick O'Leary comes down with a great catch on the sideline. But that one sticks out because Tyrod had missed Zay Jones already, and he came back to make that play.
Here's a call. Nathan from California has some thoughts on what Buffalo did on offense yesterday. Nathan, go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hey, guys. Just a couple comments from yesterday's game. I want to get your opinion on the play script, because from what I see on the game, you could pretty much see as soon as they come off script, it seems our offense starts jiving a little bit better. And I know all teams in the NFL are doing it, but I see that we're thriving a little bit better once we're off that script. So I just want to get your opinion on that. And also on Zay Jones dropping a couple balls, you know, at what point are we going to stop throwing to him? Because I think people are losing confidence in him.
Nathan, I don't think you can stop throwing to him. You have to continue to throw to him because, honestly, Zay Jones is going to be on the field, you know. So you don't want to get into a situation where – you're only throwing to Jordan Matthews. He's the only receiver that you're throwing to. Now teams will double-team him if you're always throwing the ball to him, and you have to throw it to Zay Jones. You know, he's going to be on the field. You know, he's going to make his plays.
What's the drop? The tip that went to Andre? Is that a drop?
The tip that went to Andre.
Drop, and then the tip, you know, that almost, instead of a touchdown, that almost created a major interception for him.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it could have. It didn't work out that way.
I thought that pass was a little high.
You know, it was. Zay Jones still has to make that play. He's right on the goal line. It went through both of his hands, so he has to make that play. But you will not take him out of the game. You need him. They need him to make plays. He's right now, you know, I'm not sure what's going on and why he hasn't, you know, made a couple of plays out there. But they will continue to throw the ball to him because – it's just, in all honesty, they need him out there on the field.
Yeah, and I'm willing to be patient with him, as a matter of
fact. Yeah, I was saying it on the show this morning. He's a
rookie.
I got
to listen to the show.
He's a rookie, and I remember reading Jerry Rice's book, and Jerry Rice talked about in his rookie year, he dropped so many passes, and his confidence was done. And it's not to say that Zay Jones has lost confidence, but his confidence, Jerry Rice's confidence, was shot. And he was like, I don't know why I'm dropping so many passes. I never dropped passes when I was in college, you know. And now he gets to the league, and he's this draft pick, and everybody's expecting him to play well and all of this stuff. And he's dropping balls. And then he said he went in to the offseason. Now, we don't want this to last the entire season. But he went into the offseason and trained, and he talked to a couple of different people and figured out what it was that he was doing wrong. He came back the second season and became Jerry Rice, you know. And so – Zay Jones will be fine. That's why they have to continue to throw the ball to him, because they need him.
They do need him, and I think he's going to be okay. I'm willing to be really patient with him because he's a great kid with a great college resume, and I think he's shown that he can help, but it hasn't happened in three games. I'm willing to be really, really patient, extra patient with Zay Jones.
I walked past him this morning going up to the cafeteria, and I'm like, hey, man, what's up? You good out there? And he's like, I'm good. And I was like, you know, don't listen to any outside noise. Don't listen to any of that stuff. It's a long season.
Yeah.
We're going to need you out there. Just come out, go out there and play like you played when you were young. Play like you played in college. Don't think about any of that stuff. Don't think about dropping the ball. Because when you start to think about that stuff, then you start to drop passes, you know. So just go out there and play and have fun, and you'll be all right. And he was like, hey, man, I'm good.
Look at you wandering around the building dishing out confidence. That's good.
I have to do that, especially to the young rookies, especially to a guy who plays my position.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah. All right, we got a lot to talk about. What we liked, what we didn't like. We want to hear from you. The phone line's open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. Did we tell you what's coming up on the show? I don't think so. Adolphus Washington, you just heard from. He was in studio with us. We're going to carry Sean McDermott's news conference live for you coming up at the top of the next hour at 1 o'clock. Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, joins us at 2, and a lot of talk about yesterday's game throughout the course of the afternoon. Hey, Bills fans, now it's your chance to vote for the Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week, powered by Blue Rock Energy, the official electricity supplier of the Bills. Voting is open, and it continues until tomorrow. We will announce the winner right here on the show tomorrow afternoon. Go to BlueRockEnergy.com, POTW, or Blue Rock Energy's Facebook page to learn more. The nominees for the Blue Rock Energy Player of the Game, all worthy nominees: Tyrod Taylor, the quarterback; E.J. Gaines at cornerback; Trey White at cornerback; and kicker Steven Hauschka. Who do you think is the Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week? Go to BlueRockEnergy.com, POTW, to vote. And we're back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Shady in the backfield. First and goal from the 6. They're going to throw it again. Off play action. Tyrod takes a look. Finds a man open. Touchdown, Charles Clay. Touchdown, Buffalo. The Bills back on top. A 6-yard touchdown toss from Tyrod Taylor to Charles Clay in the end zone. That third quarter Charles Clay touchdown, the Hunt Real Estate red zone play. Visit HuntRealEstate.com to score on all of your real estate needs. John Murphy and Donald Jones live at One Bills Drive. We're talking about what we liked, what we didn't like in the Bills win over the Atlanta Falcons. As you might expect, most of it, what we saw, we liked, but you may have some thoughts on all of that. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Gone through a couple of our likes so far, Donald. You started with Steven Hauschka as one of your likes. What else did you like about yesterday's game? What do you have on your list?
Ooh.
I know what you have. You have turnovers. Turnovers, yeah. Talk about that.
You know, yesterday, and it starts with, and we had Adolphus on the show in the last segment, it starts with the pressure up front. Number one, all right? And this defensive front is a very good defensive front. We talked about Lorenzo, Preston, you know, the linebackers are flying around, Ramon Humber. But the defensive line, they are doing a very good job of consistently getting pressure on the quarterback. Now, in the first half of the game yesterday, Trevor Siemian was getting the ball out fast. And I was like, man, they're going to have to get their hands up soon and bat some passes down. They came out in the second half. It was totally different. They really started to get pressure on him. He's rolling out, trying to make passes. And those passes created those turnovers, you know, or the pressure created those turnovers. And I think that is a winning formula for this team. Strong defense, you know, even if it's bend but don't break, a strong defense, and you get a couple of turnovers every game and put your offense in position to score some more points, which is something we're going to talk about. You put your offense in position to score some more points. That is a good thing, and you can win any game like that. I don't care who you're playing, the Denver Broncos, the Atlanta Falcons. If you create turnovers, you can win those games.
Here's something I like: special teams, all of it, including obviously we talked about Hauschka and his long-range kicks. They were spectacular yesterday. But the way they snuffed out that fake punt late in the third quarter.
Yeah.
By the way,
I wasn't expecting that at all.
No, I mean, Denver was deep in their own territory. Yeah. That was a gutsy call at that point.
They're on their own 30.
Yeah, to go for a fake punt there late in the third quarter. You know, the Bills are up by four, fourth and two at their own 31. All right, but and I talked to Deion Lacey about it afterwards. He said when they saw that the Denver offensive line stayed in the game, it wasn't the normal punt team, that was the clue that something was up. You can see when you watch the video, and I watched it this morning, you can see at one point it looked like Joe Webb was thinking about calling for a timeout. They didn't get the timeout, which may have changed things a little bit.
Yep.
They snapped it to the up man, and Deion Lacey just burst through there. I talked to him in the locker room yesterday. He said the offensive line tipped him off, and I said, okay, then how'd you know what to do? And he said, just go get the ball. I mean, it's pretty simple.
You know, it is. When you're on special teams, those are some of the things that you key in on, you know. And people, you know, a lot of people think that you're just out there playing. You know, there are certain keys. You have to pay attention to this stuff when you're in the game. And obviously I played on the punt return team. And so, and I played up there where you're rushing, you know, and trying to block the punt. And when you're standing there, And you're like, wait, these are offensive linemen.
Right.
They're not running down on punt to make a tackle.
But wouldn't you look at down and distance and say they wouldn't run a fake punt here in their own 30-yard line?
Well, in the back of your mind, you're thinking that. But when they keep an offensive lineman, it just puts you on alert.
Yeah.
You know, and so you're on alert to see what are they doing right now. And then they snap it to, you know, to the up back right there, and you go and get the ball. But those are certain things that you key on, you know, and it's just different. If they were punting the ball, they bring in, like, linebackers and guys that can actually run down the field. You keep the offensive lineman in that, that looks a little bit shady.
Heads-up play by the Bills special teams. I like that a lot. Here is Jerry calling from Tonawanda. Hello, Jerry. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. I've liked O'Leary since he came here from Florida State. The guy never drops a pass. He has hands like glue. I wish they would throw more to him in the pass. And I think going to Atlanta's probably, you know, they don't look at O'Leary. He caught one pass this game, maybe one last game. They're not going to really concentrate on him. I think he could be a big factor next week. And hopefully they'll use him in pass routes and hit him, because I think he's going to be the open guy, and they're not really going to pay a lot of attention to him.
Yeah, I mean, I like the, you know, yesterday when he caught that pass, he got up, he had a wrap on his hand. I thought he had a glove on. I did. I'm like, oh, he has gloves on. And then I saw it was a wrap on his hand. I'm like, man, come on, Nick. Thought he was going to put some gloves on for me. No, but, yeah, he's a player who he does catch seemingly everything, and they will pay attention to a Charles Clay and to the rest of the guys. And if you have him on the field, you're going to pay attention. The only problem is he caught a big pass yesterday, you know, so – They're somewhat going to pay attention, but at the same time, they have to focus on Charles Clay. They know they want to get the ball to Charles Clay. They know they want to get it to Jordan Matthews. Zay Jones and Nick O'Leary can be guys that can actually have good games because they're going to focus on everybody else.
Yeah, good point, though. Yeah, we'll keep an eye on Nick O'Leary for sure. We talked to a lot of guys in the locker room after the game yesterday. Time now for you to hear some of that. Let's take a trip around the locker room, brought to you by NOCO, at home, at work, and on the go. Cornerback E.J. Gaines on his second half interception.
Man, like I said, the pressure started up front. You know, they flushed him out of the pocket. It made him do something with the football, and he made a mistake. So,
a guy who wasn't throwing a lot of picks before.
Exactly. So that's just a compliment to our defense and our D-line.
Linebacker Lorenzo Alexander, the importance of yesterday's takeaways.
I mean, I must take this way, give up an extra yard, but the biggest thing for us was the turnovers. We made the big turnovers when we needed it at the end of the game. Trey and I think it was E.J., we got the interceptions to kind of shut them down there and gave our offense a couple more tries to drive the field because their defense is dominant. And was able to make it a two-score game at the end for us.
Linebacker Deion Lacy on his stop on the fake punt.
We was expecting a hard count, but once we seen the old lineman, we knew it was going to be a fake. We didn't know which way it was going to go. And then when they had a guy run on late, we was like, oh, yeah, it's a fake, so everybody was ready for it.
Offensive tackle Jordan Mills. Von Miller did not wreck the game.
We made it clear that we're going to stand firm in our technique, do what we can, and having a few tight ends and running backs chipping in to get out to not let him wreck the game, and we executed it. You know, he got a couple of plays, but we made sure he didn't wreck this game.
Quarterback Tyrod Taylor, the passing game got in rhythm.
We was able to do a couple of different things in the passing game. Some crossing routes. We knew there was a man team, even get on the edge, and our keepers. I think it was good that we mixed up different protections to try to calm down 58 and him rushing free. But ultimately, the guys went out. They took a challenge on the outside and was able to make some plays. And proud of those guys.
Kicker Steven Hauschka on his long field goals.
Going that direction and pregame, we were hitting about from 58. And then going the other direction, I could hit over 60, 62, 63. So the ball is flying good today. I don't think there's many times it's going to be over 85 degrees in Buffalo, but good conditions for kicking, and my body's feeling good, mentally I'm feeling really good, and technically I'm feeling good, so it's a lot of hard work that goes in during the whole off season and during the preseason, and just trying to get in rhythm with Colton and Reed, and they're doing an amazing job too.
Head coach Sean McDermott on rookie defensive back Tre'Davious White.
He's done a great job. He's got great mentors on the team and in the ways of Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer, Lorenzo Alexander. I mean, these guys have taken Trey under their wing, and then you match that with his work ethic and the time he puts into the film room during the week, and the results have taken care of themselves. But from a young corner, this early to do what he's done is good to see. Still a lot of work to do, but I know he's working extremely hard, and I'm happy for him.
Around the Locker Room, presented by NOCO, at work, at home, and on the go. We are recapping yesterday's win. We'd love to hear from you. The phone line's open at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Trevor Siemian lines him up, shotgun, fakes a handoff to Charles, pressured, fires it, intercepted, picked off by Tre'Davious White at the Buffalo 30, weaving through traffic. They finally bring him down at the 38-yard line. Tre'Day, Tre'Davious White with a huge interception. With a tip of the cap to the great Rick Jennerette. That's the Hilbert College call of the game. At Hilbert College, the community, the feeling, and the values are different. See Hilbert College. See differently. Go to hilbert.edu/see-different.
Call my lawyer.
I stole your call. You were the one who put the seed in my head. Trade day, and there it was.
Yeah,
and it's an iconic call from Rick Jennerette. It's a tribute to the great Rick Jennerette. And I don't think this stuff through. You know what it's like.
Oh, no, there. I know. Trade day.
Totally off the top of my head.
Hey, he said it to me today. I saw him. I walked past Zay Jones. And then I went and I saw Tre'Davious in the weight room working out because the guys are working out on Mondays. So I'm like, hey, man, as soon as I saw him, he's like, Tre'Day. I'm like, oh. I was like, hey, man, I guess the jugs machine helped out after all, huh? You end up with your first interception.
Interesting day for him. I do want to get more calls in here, but they clearly were picking on Tre'Davious White, and they had some success. And he bounced back, which was huge, I thought,
yeah.
And making that play. And even, you know, he's – what you want from a guy like that at this stage of his career is to compete, to get through the tough times, to, all right, you're going to give up some plays, we get that, but to compete, to keep competing, to not get down. He did that spectacularly yesterday, I thought.
You know, it really showed. He had a tough first half, right? And then in the second half, he bounces back, plays good, obviously catches the interception. But for me, all of those ups and downs happened in one play, and it was when he was confused out there, before the snap, and you could see him talking to either Micah Hyde or somebody, whoever was next to him, trying to figure out what it was. They went into like that bunch type of formation, and next thing you know, Emmanuel Sanders goes up the field wide open, and it was his guy. And for him to allow, you know, to be confused, his guy runs free, and for him to catch up and actually make the play and knock that ball out, and they review it, and it's an incomplete pass. It's like all of that stuff right there showed in one play.
Yeah, amazing. Let's squeeze in a call here. Jake calling from Rochester. Hello, Jake.
Hey, guys. I love the show. I listen to you guys every day.
Thank you, Jake. Thanks.
Just a couple thoughts from yesterday. The first thing is that it seems like everybody's talking about that Von Miller play, you know, especially the national media, not really giving us the credit I think deserve for the outstanding performance. And let's say the Bills have to punt. They still got to stop us, or we still got to stop them. They got to score on us. So, I mean, we were stopping them all day. What do you guys think?
I was shocked that they called the 15-yard penalty on that. That's. I mean, who hasn't done that to their friends? And
exactly.
They're laughing about it.
Murph does that to me all the time.
Look at Tyrod. He pointed to him like, you got me there. How? Come on. That's a little bit over the top.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's really –
Carl Cheffers,
you know,
and your crew, what are we talking about?
It's one of the rare times that, you know, the Bills are on the right side of a sketchy call.
Yeah.
You know? And
Talk about no fun league, though. And they were having fun.
They were having fun. They were both laughing. Tyrod pointed at him afterwards like, oh, you got me right there. You know, and they're both – you can see Von Miller laughing. You can see Tyrod Taylor laughing, and the ref throws the flag. At first, because I'm listening to the guys on the CBS broadcast.
Oh, the radio's not good enough for you? Okay.
And I'm listening to the guys on the broadcast, and they were confusing me because they kept thinking it was the hit. And I'm like, is it the hit? Like, no, that's not what they call, right? It can't be the hit. He didn't hit him hard. And they said that for a while before they figured out what it was.
Have you learned your lesson? If you listen to the radio broadcast, I knew right away because I saw this exchange.
I saw
these two, and I saw that Cheffers throw his penalty, right, you know, and I thought, oh, are you kidding me? That's a penalty? I thought it was kind of funny. Von Miller said he killed the game with that. Which I think is a little bit over the top, too. He said it was a surprise. He said, I can't put my team in a situation like that. I've got to be better than that.
Yeah,
don't
I mean,
beat yourself up, Von.
He is going to beat himself up because, you know, it's like you know that, all right, I just got a penalty and that was dumb. I also didn't do anything, but they called the penalty on me. Right. And next time it's like I can't even have fun with – they know each other.
Right.
Tyrod Taylor said it. I know him. Like, we joke around like that,
terrible,
you know?
And, terrible call.
It was a rough call.
All right, coming up next, we're going to hear from head coach Sean McDermott. He's ready to meet the media at the top of the hour. We will carry that news conference live. Plenty of time after that for your phone calls at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Back with more in a moment, the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Update from One Bills Drive. Victory Monday here, but a work day under head coach Sean McDermott. Got Bills players here for conditioning and film review. The Bills handled the Denver Broncos yesterday 26-16 to pick up their second win of the season. Seemed to come out of the game without any serious injuries. Head coach Sean McDermott will update the media moments from now, and he will address any injury concerns he might have. He also expected to update the condition of defensive tackle Marcell Dareus and left tackle Cordy Glenn, neither of whom played in yesterday's game. Atlanta Falcons up next for the Bills, last year's NFC champions, at the new Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta on Sunday. Broncos linebacker Von Miller says he killed the game with his penalty against the Bills. He drove Tyrod Taylor to the ground after an incomplete pass, reached out his hand to help him up, and then pulled it away and laughed. He was given 15 yards for unsportsmanlike conduct. Bills' drive kept alive, and 10 plays later, they kicked a field goal to go up by 10 points. Miller, via the Broncos' official website, says, "I've got to be smarter than that. I've got to go out there to do something like that in a crucial situation. I've got to be better than that." Philadelphia Eagles running back Darren Sproles, the veteran, tore an ACL and broken arm on the same play yesterday, according to ESPN. He is having surgery on his arm today. He will require surgery on his knee. His season is over. Sproles injured in the first half against the Giants following an awkward plant and hit from safety Darian Thompson in yesterday's Eagles game. Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner, says he took pride in how the league responded to President Trump's divisive comments about protests during the national anthem. All across the league, players knelt, locked arms, raised their fists, and even refused to come out of the locker room, joined by coaches and even owners. Goodell last night said, "The way we reacted today and this weekend made me proud. I am proud of our league." And the Buffalo Sabres lost both of their preseason games over the weekend to Toronto, scores of 3-0 and 3-1. Two preseason games remaining, Wednesday night in Pittsburgh, Friday at home against the Islanders. And that is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones, we're coming to you live from One Bills Drive today, and waiting Sean McDermott, who will step to the podium momentarily, update those injuries, recap yesterday's game, answer questions from the media. We'll carry that live for you.
Speaking of injuries, that's tough for Darren Sproles because I think he was going to retire after the season,
mm-hmm.
and that is a tough way to end a career, to break your arm and tear your ACL in the same play. That is a tough way, but he's had a very good career. I remember him when I was still – I don't even know how old I was. He was still at Kansas State. I was young, though. I think I was still in high school. And I remember he was a beast, and he came into the league, and he has played very, very well, you know, his years in the league.
He sort of was San Diego, right? Isn't that where he started? Did he start with the Chargers? I know he played. Didn't he play there for a while?
I think.
Now you got me thinking. But it seems to me my recollection of Darren Sproles was he was kind of the first of his kind. You know what I mean? The first of, like, I don't know how to describe it even. Kind of a hybrid guy who can make big plays, valuable in the return game, catch passes. I always thought he was like a trendsetter, I thought.
He was like a trendsetter. Plus, he was always, to me, like the Muggsy Bogues of the NFL.
Because he's so small.
He's so small, you know, and that never stopped him or anything like that. But, yeah, he is a guy who kick return, catch passes, could run the ball as well. He is like a hybrid guy, utility knife type of thing.
Always a fan of Darren Sproles over the years. Yeah, San Diego for 5 years
mm-hmm.
To start his career, then New Orleans for 3, and the last 4 with the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yep.
Yeah, great player, Darren Sproles. How old is he, Donald? I'm looking it up. You know?
I don't.
I'll find out how old he is. I'm sure, 10 years in the league, so I'm sure he's 30-something. Great player. Sorry to see that end.
He's
like
probably about 32.
Yeah, I would think so.
Because I'm 30.
Hey, want to get a plug in for something going on here at One Bills Drive this weekend. The Bills and Republic Services teaming up for an electronics recycling drive. This is big. It's Saturday, 9 a.m. to 12 noon here at One Bills Drive at the AdPro Sports Training Center parking lot. Simple. You bring your old computers, your TVs, your cell phones, and any other electronics to be recycled safely. You donate an item, and you get a special Bill Store coupon. It goes on Saturday, rain or shine. The best part is you drive right through. They unload your equipment right from your car. It is this Saturday, 9 to noon, at the AdPro Sports Training Center parking lot right outside our doors here. Electronics Recycling Drive. Go to BuffaloBills.com, Electronic Recycling, for more info. But it's coming up this Saturday, the Blue Team Republic Services Electronic Recycling Drive. You must have
throw
some
it all in there. I don't. I don't have anything that I'm throwing out.
I do.
I know you do. But no, I don't have anything.
I got a cell phone about this big I want to get rid of. From
really?
1980-something.
No, you know what? You strike me like you used to have like a car phone.
I did.
Like one of the ones that was actually in the car. Did you?
Absolutely. One of the first. I was like the Darren Sproles of car phones. I was.
Oh, you the trendsetter.
Yeah, it was cool. Sean McDermott's going to speak with the media momentarily. In the meantime, we'll take your phone calls at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Here's a call from Jack in Rochester. Hello, Jack. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Jack.
I called last week, and I was saying about maybe Tyrod should scramble more in the pocket. And Donald said, you know, he'd rather see Tyrod, you know, use his legs within the structure of the game, plan.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, on Denver's first interception, that Trevor Siemian scrambles out of the pocket, and he looked like he was wide open all by himself. And I thought, well, he's going to prove Donald wrong. And boom, he throws this strike right to Gaines, I think it was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And part of me cheered and part of me said, how does that happen? I mean, there was nobody in front of him. He could see the field. And I'm wondering, when quarterbacks scramble, is there a problem that basically they're seeing something they never saw before in practice, and it's a view of the field they're not used to?
Well, when you're scrambling and you're running, you're waiting for somebody to come open. And so, you know, obviously – typically, you're looking at one receiver hoping that he comes open. He does something to come open. Now, he threw that ball. Did the receiver fall? I think the receiver fell.
Slipped. Did he go down to the ground? I'm not sure.
He went down to the ground, and okay. E.J. Gaines broke back in and caught that interception. But, you know, a lot of times you don't see guys. You don't see the defense. You know, you're looking at the receiver, and you don't see guys that are actually on the defense that are running with you, you know. And next thing you know, you throw the ball up. And those guys end up making the play. So it is a little bit different than everything breaks down, you know, and everybody's running one way. You're trying to make this throw, not seeing the guys that are running with you.
E.J. Gaines has been a nice pickup, Donald. I mean, even before yesterday, which clearly his best game was yesterday, but I like the way he plays. I like the physical way he plays.
What I was about to say. I like the physical way he plays the game. He's going to get, you know, some holding calls. He's going to get a pass interference every now and then, but I like the physical way that he plays the game. He's playing with a lot of confidence, and you need to have confidence in this league when you're playing cornerback, when you're playing any position, but especially the cornerback position, and when they take so many different, you know, things that these guys like to use, like their hands and things down the field, you have to have confidence in your feet and confidence that you can make a play, and especially when you're playing receivers like they played yesterday, you know, two very good Pro Bowl receivers.
Yeah.
Guys that, you know, have been having good seasons, had good games last week. The game that's coming up this week, that's a bigger task with those two receivers that they have and the way Matt Ryan likes to get them the ball. You need to have confidence. E.J. Gaines is playing with it, and Tre'Davious White is playing with it as well.
You know, 3 days ago, Friday, after the Thursday night game, when Sammy Watkins had a pretty productive night, Thursday night football, and we're in here and people are second-guessing the trade, and I get that. Every time Sammy plays well, he will play well. He's a good player. That will be discussed. That trade will be discussed. But 3 days later, E.J. Gaines, starting caliber corner, who made some plays, helped out tremendously in the win yesterday. Oh, by the way, a second-round draft pick in exchange for Sammy Watkins.
Right.
You know, how's it work out in the end? I don't know, but I'm just saying it's not as if the Bills dealt away Sammy Watkins and got nothing in return, or even more, it's not as if they let him leave via free agency.
It was just hard. It's so hard because people look at just the talent, you know, just the talent of a Sammy Watkins. Is Sammy Watkins a difference maker? Yeah, he is. Ronald Darby a good corner? Can he be a difference maker? Yeah, he can be a difference maker. But we talked about it. When that trade happened, what guys do you want that fit your scheme, guys that understand what it is that you want to do and play the game like you want them to play the game, you know? And Coach McDermott and Brandon Bean did a good job of finding a guy in E.J. Gaines and even Jordan Matthews that play the game the way they want them to play the game. And it's working out thus far. We'll see how it continues to play out. But right now, E.J. Gaines is looking good, and Jordan Matthews is coming on as well.
I talked to E.J. Gaines in the locker room with a couple of reporters yesterday and asked him about this good Buffalo defense, about the interception, but just overall how well the Bills are playing defense. Here's what he had to say.
I think it started up front, you know, just getting pressure on the quarterback. You know, we went in wanting to do that and making him make some mistakes with the ball, and he did that today.
You guys were kind of starved for interceptions, takeaways last week. You got one today. Tell me about your pick. How did it get you?
Man, like I said, the pressure started up front. You know, they flushed him out of the pocket. It made him do something with the football, and he made a mistake. So
that was a guy who wasn't throwing a lot of picks before.
Exactly. So that's just a compliment to our defense and our D-line.
Were you on the field for the fourth down fake punt that they ran?
No, I wasn't, but our special teams did their job. You know, it's all about everybody doing their job when we get out there, and Coach stresses that every week, and we did that today.
Obviously, you're out there, though. You're watching film on that. I mean, did you guys kind of know or anticipate something? It looked like a lot of pre-snap communication. You guys knew something was up.
Yeah, we did. Every time they go out there when it's fourth and short, you know, the coach lets them know, watch for the fake and watch for this and that. So they went out there and did their job.
It was a back-and-forth game, you know, that you guys kind of survived a lot. There's a lot of ups and downs, lead changes. I think three or four lead changes.
Yeah, you know, it's the NFL. You know, it's definitely going to be some ups and downs in football games, but as long as you have more ups and downs, you know, you come away with the W.
It is the NFL, isn't it? I mean, all the stuff that went on before the game, when people just line up and play, very often it turns into a pretty good game.
Exactly. You know, that's how it goes. That's the NFL. That's our job, is to go out there and do what we're supposed to and get wins for the city.
E.J. Gaines talking at his locker yesterday. We were there along with Sal Capaccio asking questions. And, you know, going into this game, Donald, and going into yesterday's game and going into this game, they're going to look like mismatches on paper. The Bills' smaller cornerbacks, E.J. Gaines and Tre'Davious White, against big physical receivers. Yesterday it was Demaryius Thomas. It's coming Sunday. It'll be the granddaddy of them all, right? Julio Jones,
yeah.
Who is as big and as physical a receiver as you want. But just because there's a height difference there, I get the sense that these two know how to play, Gaines and Tre'Davious.
Yeah, when you look at the way Gaines and Tre'Davious White play, they play physical. They want to play up in your face. They want to get their hands on you. And when you have big physical receivers, you know, it plays right into the game, because you don't have quick guys that are like shifty trying to get off the line of scrimmage. You have big guys that want to be physical with you. These guys want to be physical as well, you know. So it should be battles all over the field this week, because Julio Jones is probably the most physical receiver, and he is a beast. He is really a game changer. Mohamed Sanu, in my opinion, is the best number two wide receiver in the game. So that combination of those two, you need corners that are playing with confidence and that are playing physical. It doesn't matter the size or any of that stuff of the corners. As long as they play with confidence and they play physical and they get their hands on those guys, we know that they are both quick, Gaines and Tre'Davious. As long as they are right with those guys, they'll be able to make plays.
They both, I know Gaines got a pass interference. Tre'Davious did too. I remember him complaining.
Yeah, I do.
Very late flag on Tre'Davious.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as I go back and look at those, they're somewhat questionable calls. And I think both of them, the result of those two, E.J. Gaines and Tre'Davious White, trying to be physical, trying to, you know, man up and finish plays. And that's what they have to do to compete against these guys, right?
You know, when you're playing big physical receivers like yesterday, Demaryius Thomas, is like you have to be physical with that guy. If you're not physical with him, he's going to outman you. They're going to throw it to him. He's going to catch everything. The same thing with Julio Jones coming up and Mohamed Sanu coming up. You have to be physical with these guys. So, you know, just expect, and hopefully they don't, but just, like, don't be upset if these guys get a pass interference call or something like that this week, because they have to be physical with these receivers that they're about to face, because those receivers – will try to be physical with them, and they will try to just manhandle you all across the field, and you can't allow that to happen, or you won't be able to stop them.
Let's take a call from John. Hello, John. Welcome. You're on the air with us as we recap yesterday's Bills win over the Broncos. What do you got for us today, John?
Well, actually, you kind of stole my question.
I'm sorry.
I was going to bring up the two trades in the preseason and how well they're working out for the Bills. Now, injuries are injuries. They're going to happen to both sides eventually. But right now, the Bills have two very productive players. They got two high draft picks, and both of the guys that the Bills traded away are injured. But let me ask you a quick question, since you already covered the subject. The quarterback for the Washington Redskins can't possibly be held over again for another one-year contract. It would be too expensive. Does he fit into what the Buffalo Bills are trying to do? Because if they can pick him up, obviously you got to pay him, but you don't have to give up any draft picks
right.
for him. And the Bills having so many draft picks, and everyone's going for quarterbacks,
right.
there could be a lot of other valuable players or draft trading to go yeah. on. And do you think that could work?
Let me before we move on to Kirk Cousins, John, your first point is very well made, and you're right. The trades right now are working out. And we'll see we'll see what happens on this. Let's go to Sean McDermott. I want to get back to that after Sean McDermott. But right now, let's go to the podium across the way with the head coach of the Buffalo Bills, Sean McDermott.
You know, still going through the evaluations at this point, Sal, but at this point, we feel pretty good about you know, the game and the injuries as far as that goes. So, yeah, we feel we're pretty fortunate at this point.
Sean, this morning, Jim Kelly said that he lost a lot of respect for LeSean McCoy for what his actions were during the national anthem. What is your reaction to hearing, you know, one of the faces of the franchise say that about another current face of the franchise?
Well, I believe this. I believe we put out a team statement for a reason, and I stick by that, and I stand by that statement. You know, of equality, of love, of unity, and I think that's the important part right here and right now. And really, anything in addition to that for us is we've got to get our focus on our team and the Atlanta Falcons at this point.
Along those lines, though, Jim was on the sidelines with you guys. Is that something that you think will continue for the anthem if that's how he feels? Because it doesn't seem to, you know, match up with that message of, you know, unity and equality and things like that.
Yeah, again, we're focused on the Atlanta Falcons and you know, what's going to happen next week, you know, will happen next week. And right now I'm just focused on the Atlanta Falcons.
Should folks watching football games on Sunday expect the players to continue to demonstrate? The president has continued to chime in on his opinion on those demonstrations?
You know, that's really a question for them. You know, at this point, again, we are focused on the Atlanta Falcons, and you know, what's going to happen this weekend is what's going to happen. I don't have a crystal ball, unfortunately. but with all due respect to your question, you know, we've got to make sure we're focused on the task at hand, and that's a football game, and putting our best foot forward as a football team in Atlanta.
Coach, I have a 7-year-old son. You have young kids. Did they ask you about this? Have you been asked about this by them? Because I have. You know, what do you tell them? How do you explain this to them?
Well, that's a great question, Josh. I mean, there's my kids at home have not. Not to get personal, but they haven't. But I understand where you're coming from. And there's certainly teachable moments in life. And I would say that, you know, that communication is important in terms of our family and our football team. Communication is important. We had a great meeting Saturday night with Terry and Kim. And that's exactly what unfolded was great communication. And I think that's really the first step, that we can share openly and communicate with one another.
You said after the game in your speech to the team, quote, they tried to pull us apart, but we got closer together. Who did you mean by they?
Say that again.
Your speech to the team in the locker room last night.
Well, that happens just generally speaking, that happens every year around the NFL, professional sports. You know, you get pulled in different directions. You get pulled in different directions by injuries. You get pulled in different directions just – you know, schematically you get pulled in different directions. The opponent tries to pull you in different directions. So as you've heard me say before, Mike, it's a test, I believe, the NFL is, of how long a group of men and women can hang together and come together and grow stronger through a season. And so that just generally speaking was what I was referring to.
That was related to what President Trump said at all?
None of it.
Sean, from, you know, years from now, maybe you're focused on Atlanta, and so I'm including that respectfully as I ask this question. Mm-hmm. Years from now, we may look back on these as a very special time or a moment, cause, what have you, with what's going on in the country. You do have to try to win football games, keep everybody together. Have you ever been through anything like this, or where you have all these things going on, but you still need to worry about 13 more games? What is your general philosophy on how you're going to move forward with that?
Well, our general philosophy is you know, certainly there are things that are bigger than the game of football. So I recognize that. That said, as you mentioned, we have 13 more games, and what's important for us is that we focus on the process involved in getting ourselves ready for those 13 games, and that we continue to grow every day and come together as a football team. And that's really what our emphasis – that's where our emphasis lies at this point in time.
Have you spoke with Jim Kelly about his comments today?
No.
Do you plan to?
Not at this time.
Will he be welcome on the, will he be welcome on the sideline in future home games?
You know, that's Jim Kelly. Listen, Jim Kelly's a he's a one of the hallmarks of this organization. You know, and you know, he's an alum of this organization, this football team, and so you know, I don't at this point see that changing.
John, did you I don't know if you saw LeSean because he was on the far end, but he was, you know, it sort of looked like he was making it a bit about him. Guys knelt privately, and it was fine. They did, too, on the other side. LeSean kind of turned it into a show. Did that at all disappoint you that he was doing exercises? I mean, that's taking it a bit too far. I think a lot of people thought that. What is your thought on that?
You know, right now, honestly, Sal, I'm focused on the Atlanta Falcons. I really am. And I'm not, you know, we don't spend too much time looking in our rearview mirror. We really don't. And so we've got to get ourselves ready for the NFC defending champion, and that's really where our focus is right now.
John, looking ahead, have any players talked to you about wanting to take this cause in the community? And, you know, because kneeling is one thing, but have they talked to you about wanting to do something besides just that demonstration, take it further in the community?
Well, we had, you know, conversations Saturday night before the game, and, you know, there was a lot of different thoughts and ideas, and respectfully so. You know, really those conversations, you know, remain private for the most part at this time. And, you know, it would just it's important that we handle things the right way. And that's really the takeaway that I came from those meetings with, was that we do the right thing. And that's why we were having those conversations. Everyone wants to do the right thing. And I think that's healthy. I think that's there's respect in that and wanting to do the right thing. It shows that it matters. And, you know, that's what I came away with from that.
Knowing how detail-oriented you are and how much the process truly does matter all the way down to little things, did you ever get a feeling of worry at all that Saturday night that this would distract, take away from your team preparing for a football game? Did that ever go through your head? Were you worried about that at all?
Well, I worry about a lot of things. That's why I don't have any hair anymore. You know what? We've got a resilient group of guys, and I think you saw that on the field yesterday. And it was hot. There were certain things going on, obviously. But the focus, I could tell pretty early in the process yesterday with pregame warm-up that they were focused on the game. And you saw that in the outcome. So, you know, I was extremely proud of the way the guys played. I was very appreciative. We are very appreciative of the fan support throughout the game. I thought it was, you know, Denver had a couple false start penalties on offense, and I give the credit to our fans. I mean, it was great. And to stay there through four quarters in the heat, the abnormal heat for this area, was phenomenal and very much appreciated on our part.
I do have a Falcons question for you. Obviously, you went down to Carolina a couple weeks ago, and the talk was that you had to face that defense every day. A little bit different now, but still, almost like a division opponent for you, Coach. I mean, you went against Matt Ryan. Some of the numbers, you sacked Matt Ryan. Your defense had plenty of times. How much more does that help in preparation this week, almost like for you, it's like a division opponent?
Yeah, I mean, awareness always helps, you know, like it did last week with Coach Dennison and the Denver Broncos, their personnel. It'll help. Again, I don't think it's going to win or lose the game, but it'll help just going into it. They do have a different offensive coordinator at this point in time, you know, than they did last year, so that'll be a little bit different. So it'll just add value, hopefully, and as we prepare from a game plan standpoint.
When you arrived here, this was a defense that was an underachieving defense, and when you arrived here,
did you expect that this defense would be playing so stoutly, given all the moving parts, especially in the back end, that that have occurred?
Well, I give you credit, a lot of credit to our defensive staff and the players. They do a great job. I mean, they play as I mentioned yesterday after the game, they play as a team. And when you have it, when you look to have a good defense, that's really the cornerstone that you build on, is that every guy does his job. And we call it, as you've heard me say before, being 1/11th of the defense. And when you do that, when you buy into that approach of doing your job and playing team defense, gang tackling, swarming, those type of adjectives that you hear, those are it's probably not adjectives, it's probably adverbs, I guess, right? Is that true? Yeah. I was an English major. But those are the things that you look for. Even when you're, this tall, growing up playing youth sports, football, whatever it is, when you play hard and you play together, typically good things happen. And I think our players, our coaches have done a phenomenal job, led by Leslie Frazier. And I'm really just in the background, just offering support when and if needed.
However, it's one thing that to give them the message, but for a group that came together, in some, DJ Gaines just coming here like a month ago, what does it say about them buying in so quickly? It's one thing to deliver them that message, but they've got to buy in and they've got to gel, and some of these guys haven't had much time to do so. What does that say about them?
Well, it says that they're resilient and that they care about, that they care and they care about the results that we're getting. But more importantly, they care about the process and earning the right to win. They spend an incredible amount of time in here, in the building, working on film, spending time together, communicating. There were some plays yesterday that we want to have back, and it wasn't all exactly the way it needed to look. So we've got a lot of room for growth, and that's the encouraging part, is we've done this, yes, and we're excited about that. For us to continue to trend in this type of direction, we have to have that type of growth mindset and hold each other accountable, continue to do that, and celebrate the goods and correct the bads.
Sean, prior to the kick yesterday, there for fourth, you said that we need to see more urgency from Marcel. He didn't play yesterday, so it's a little tough for him to do it there. But just in what ways do you need to see more urgency from Marcel going forward?
Just generally speaking, just like our entire football team, there's things that we're doing well, like I mentioned with the defense, there's things that we can improve on. And I would say the same thing again with respect to Marcel, same thing with myself. There's things that, I feel like I did well yesterday. There's some things that I can improve on. And that's really, if you take the right approach, you take the right mindset, you continue to get better every day, every week, and every game. And that's the goal, short and long term. And that's how you sustain success. And that's what we're looking to do.
Sean, into the game on Sunday, I know you said you wanted to move some pieces around offensively, but it seemed like also you almost took advantage of what the assumed identity of your offense is, which is that, run first kind of philosophy. I mean, you had some personnel groupings where everything is saying run, and then Coach Dennison's calling a pass. But was that kind of part of it too, playing off your identity almost to catch Denver off guard?
Well, I thought, Rick and the offensive staff put a great game plan together, and then the offense executed, and that was key. We had some down-the-field throws that we executed well on. We moved the pocket a little bit at times, sometimes successfully, sometimes not successfully. But that was good identity football right there. I thought that we did some good things there, and red zone offense was phenomenal. We did some good things in the red zone. Obviously, the last drive, we were trying to take more time off the clock. We knew that was important rather than trying to throw the ball into the end zone, but to take time off the clock and then take points to make it a two-score game.
Sean, what are you seeing on the tape? I mean, LeSean's got, I think, 26 carries for 30 yards the last 3 weeks combined, which is pretty abnormal. What are you seeing that's happening that's not allowing him to get the space he needs?
Yeah, they're crowding the box quite a bit. I mean, it's a healthy respect for LeSean, and so you saw that really pretty much after the Jets game, and Carolina did that, and then we saw that yesterday from Denver, and that's where we have to spread the ball around. I thought we did a nice job of that. Tyrod did a good job of that, and using Charles Clay You know, using getting the different receivers involved with Jordan Matthews and Kalen Clay yesterday, you know, as well. So that was good to see.
Sean, they really went after Tre'Davious early with some mixed results there, but he battled through, got the interception at the end. How valuable of an experience is that for his development coming this early in his rookie year?
That was good. You know, I'm not so sure that they necessarily made it a point to go after him. Maybe they did, but they've got two good receivers that balance out their offense on both sides of the ball. So whether they're throwing it on one side or the other, they were going at someone, you know. But I thought, again, just like I mentioned earlier, with the resiliency of our defense and the guys, the team as a whole, you know, he didn't back down. He competed like crazy. I thought our entire team competed throughout the game. And, you know, the game we were behind, we were tied, we were ahead, and it kind of took on a lot of different forms in terms of the complexion of the game throughout all four quarters. You know, Tre'Davious, like the rest of the team, I thought came out in the second half and really finished strong and really with a winning mindset.
Can you walk us through the preparation throughout the week and then right before the snap of the fake punt that they ran, and how it seemed like you guys were calling for it pretty much? I know it was situational that you would expect that, but you know, what maybe really kind of tipped them off that something happened, and then also the play of Deion on that play particularly.
Right. Well, Danny Crossman does a great job for us schematically, game plan wise. He leads the special teams for us in the units there. I'll give a lot of credit to Colt Anderson. Colt was the first one out there that noticed it. They had a look that Colt was very aware of, and then Deion obviously made the big play. So that was I thought a big momentum shift in the game on the heels of some other things that had gone our way, and then all of a sudden we don't get the points we wanted, but. You know, that was a big momentum shift. Obviously, change in field position was huge.
What kind of weapon is Stephen Hauschka leading to go out and through a couple 50-plus yard field goals?
Yeah, it was great to see. I feel like he's in a good rhythm. And, you know, really the operation between Reed with the snap and Colton, and then with Stephen, the relationship that they've been able to form over, again, a short amount of time has been really fun to watch, and they really feed off of one another. They help each other out throughout the week. To be able to get the points in the 2-minute drive before half was key. And the momentum, again, the momentum shift to get to that point in the game, and for him to knock that through was awesome. He kicked the ball strong yesterday, and he's in a good position, I think, and in a groove.
When it comes to Marcell Dareus and maybe wanting maybe more urgency from him, are you worried that you're not? He might be tuning the team out, or you may not be able to light a fire under him.
I worry. Like I said, I see my hair. I worry about a lot of things, right? but I worry about all of our players. I do. And that we continue to grow, continue to get better. And that's my job as the head coach of this football team is to lead and continue to try and put our best foot forward. So. There's a lot of work that goes into working with all of our players, and I enjoy it. And so Marcell is a big time part of this football team, and we look forward to getting Marcell back on the field as soon as possible.
Do you know if it's possible for either him and Corey for this week?
Not sure. Again, it's still early at this point. We'll know more in the next 24, 48 hours. Sorry.
Given what happened Thursday night, and I know that you acknowledged it was talked about, Bills fans, there's angst. We lost our guys. We want those guys. We're our guys. And then in that context, you come out a few days later and win a game with your guys. What does that mean to be able to get that win on Sunday, knowing that there was a lot of unease around here regarding where this team is?
Give me more specifics, if you could. With
Sammy Watkins and Robert Woods and Marquise Goodwin and Roby Coleman, and
right.
Those are all our guys, and we're watching them on Thursday, and now Here we go against Denver, and you beat Denver.
Yeah, got a lot of confidence in our guys. Got a lot of confidence in this football team. Like I said the other day, I really do. I said it the other day, and I stand by it. Got a lot of confidence in the guys in this locker room. Our wide receivers, as you specifically addressed the wide receiver group, got a lot of confidence in our wide receivers. You know, we're building a team, as you've heard me say for a long time now, that we are building a team. And that's not a team on paper. It's a team of human beings that love to compete. and they support one another. They work on becoming better every day. And this is not to say that those other guys don't or didn't. I wish them the best. But I know what we have in that locker room. And there's no other locker room I'd rather be in than with those guys. All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, there you go. Sean McDermott at his Monday news conference, carrying it for you live here on the show, the John Murphy Show with Donald Jones. And a lot of talk at the beginning about the national anthem protests. We've been, you know, we were going to talk about it an hour ago, and we got sidetracked by the game of all things. Mm-hmm. But we'll talk about it a little bit when we return. You're welcome to join us. Phone lines open 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
There's a snap. Four-man rush. Simeon sets up the throw. Now pocket collapsing. Has to dart back to his left. Looks downfield. Fires downfield. It is picked off by E.J. Gaines at the 32-yard line. He goes down there. Intercepted by the Bills. They get the takeaway they needed from E.J. Gaines. That's the Advanced Alarm Defensive Player of the Game, brought to you by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. One of the big plays in yesterday's game. Before the game even kicked off, news made not just here, all around the NFL with the national anthem protests. You know the story. You know how it started. Saturday night, the Bills issued a statement, and we want to talk about that for a little bit from owners Terry and Kim Pegula. And the statement reads like this: several of us met tonight, Saturday, players, coaches, staff, and ownership. Our goal was to provide open dialogue and communication. We listened to one another. We believe that's the best way to work through any issue we are facing on and off the field. President Trump's remarks were divisive and disrespectful to the entire NFL community, but we tried to use them as an opportunity to further unify our team and our organization. And it went on to say, our players have the freedom to express themselves in a respectful and thoughtful manner. We all agreed that our sole message is to provide and to promote an environment that is focused on love and equality. I think for the most part, Donald, they did that. And look, you've got 53 guys who have probably 53 different opinions on a variety of topics. I mean, assemble 53 of your friends, see if you agree on everything. They don't. 53 guys who had different thoughts on the president's remarks and demonstrated the way they thought fit in a peaceful manner, and did it with arms linked for the most part, which I thought was key. It did demonstrate that there was a unity, and that they're, you know, they're focused on love and equality. I thought the Bills nailed it for the most part yesterday. And those who wanted to kneel knelt, and those who wanted to stand stood, and everybody was linked arms all together. So, you know, it's a protest. Nobody got hurt.
Right.
I think it probably went as good as it could go. And as far as forecasting what happens from here on out, you heard Sean McDermott ask that question. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how these players are going to feel. I don't know what would trigger, you know, where's the next eruption coming from the White House? You know, what might come out of there that would trigger even more protests or no protests? Who knows? Things change on a daily basis. So I guess, you know, as far as that went, it was unfortunate. It was unfortunate the players were put in a situation where many of them felt a need to protest, but they were put in there by the comments from the White House, and that's what they did.
I think the biggest thing in this country, and what everyone has to understand, that there is a right to freedom of speech, and there is a right to protest as long as it's peaceful, you know? And so that's what the players did yesterday. You know, you had your people your players who decided that they wanted to stand. You had your players that decided they wanted to kneel. As long as they all came to that decision and collectively, that was totally fine. And that's what we're all trying to get across here. Like, everybody has their own opinions on a variety of topics in this country, okay? But just because my opinion on something is different than yours does not mean that I'm wrong and you're necessarily right. It's my opinion, that's your opinion, but it doesn't mean that we can't unify and we can't come together collectively, you
and
know?
Work and so, together, which is
right,
what this
exactly.
is all about.
And that's exactly what this is all about. I think when Colin Kaepernick decided to do it, and look, I'm proud of him. He started something last year, even though he wasn't the first one to do it, but he did something last year, and now you look at it, it's still being done, and it's now growing, you know, and it's growing, and it was a peaceful protest, you know, and so I'm proud of the players for what they did yesterday. I do have mixed emotions on it. I obviously see what fans and people are saying on Twitter. I see what they say to me on social media, and that's your opinion. And if you don't like that people have a freedom of speech in this country, I don't know what to tell you.
I don't know what to do with you. A couple of really interesting, thoughtful comments in the locker room yesterday, which is not normally the forum for political statements, but you can tell that the Bills players were engaged in this, several of them anyway, including kicker Steven Hauschka, who just getting to know him, and I was kind of blown away by his perspective on what went down both Saturday night at the meeting among several players and the owners and staff and on the field yesterday. Here's what kicker Steven Hauschka said about that whole incident Saturday and into Sunday.
I'm amazed by the strength in this room for us to be able to come together and have those discussions. And if I could encourage anything, it would for people to just have an open mind and try to have some discussions with people that are different than them.
What about the strength outside this room with 31 other teams that basically did the same thing as you guys, and owners and coaches and all together?
Yeah, what I think's important to understand, you know, being a white guy who grew up outside of Boston, you know, I almost went in to be a dentist. I went to a school it was a diverse school, but, you know, I've been fortunate to be able to play NFL football and see a lot of different locker rooms and get to know a lot of different guys. And I call a lot of my teammates friends, and I see what they see, and I support their messages, because – and if my life had gone in a different direction, I might not have seen what they see. So I think it might take some trust, like some blind trust from some of the fans and some of the people in our country, to just understand that the people who do know our teammates, and that, you know, I know their families, and I know how I've heard stories, and I know how they've been treated. You know, I think some blind trust is important there, because it's hard. You know, we get kind of stuck in our own circles, and so I've been fortunate to get into many different locker rooms and just see what's going on. And I support my teammates and love them and respect them, regardless of their opinions. But
man, I'm blown away by Steven Hauschka, his perspective on that.
And that's the truth. The biggest thing, you know, that he said there was everybody should just keep an open mind. This is a free country. You do have that free right to of speech and protest. Just keep an open mind and listen to what somebody else is saying. You know, these are people's realities. What you know, players have been trying to do and people have been protesting for a long time is reality. It's not something that people are making up out here, you know? So just keep an open mind, and like you said, have blind trust. Like, if you know, someone says, look, this really happens, don't say, oh, you're wrong, you should leave this country. No, this stuff really does happen, and it's so much bigger than football. I love what Steven Hauschka said there.
Lorenzo Alexander, we know him actually a lot better than we know Steven Hauschka, but he had comments on this, so I thought were interesting yesterday, including you know, you talk about people say something happened, it really happened. Michael Bennett talked about an incident he had a couple of weeks ago. Listen to what Lorenzo Alexander had to say about this whole issue of the national anthem protests.
If you don't understand it, then that's just where you're at. I mean, you can't change everybody's minds. But it's some guys on this team that won't kneel. We have several guys that say that I don't want to do it. But it's all about respecting people's opinions and perspective. But we still love each other. And that's what this country's all about. And I think that's what, you know, those guys are doing as far as trying to change
it. What was that discussion like with those teammates, and knowing that there would be some guys who did it and some guys who didn't? When all this came to a head, you had to kind of decide as a team what to do.
It was great understanding. You know, it was open dialogue. What I really appreciate was our owners being in that room, our GM, and supporting us. You know, obviously, Terry Pegula, he came up poor. And he hasn't forgotten where he comes from. So he did a great job as far as relating with us and allowing to use our platform and really his organization to stand on to make a statement. A lot of respect for him, because a lot of owners don't have to do that or didn't do that. But again, it was an open forum, great dialogue, great understanding. I think everybody felt like something needed to be done. And we just came, and some guys would kneel as long as we were all together. And that was the key. You know, we have different opinions, come from different backgrounds, but at the end of the day, we respect each other enough to still love on each other, even though we see things differently.
Those sons of sounded almost, it sounded condescending and almost racist.
Yes, I mean, it was, you know, I don't know. The closest you could walk up against it without saying it, because obviously the majority of players that are kneeling are African American. And to make it personal, like I took a knee today, does that mean I'm an SOB now? Is my mom a B? You know, everybody that know, you know my mom. No. I mean, so I think people that have a platform, make a lot of money, you need to stand and use your platform. That's what it's all about. I have a huge voice. And if I see something going on, that's what leadership is all about. Stepping up for those that don't have a voice. And that's what God's doing around the league. And so either you understand or you don't, but I'm not here to change everybody's mind. I'm going to do what I think is right, and I thought today was a great way to kneel and show the guys that are doing it for their causes that we're with them and I support them.
Lorenzo Alexander, and boy, I can't add much more to that, Donald, to tell you the truth. I thought Hauschka and Alexander extremely good in what they said and articulate and perfectly articulated the team's mindset. And folks may disagree. I get that. You may disagree 100%. But this team, it seems to me, found a way out of it. The difficult situation they were painted in this weekend, found a way out of it and preserved the core of unity and, you know, love and equality as articulated in the statement from the owners.
And that's the biggest thing. They did it as a team, and that's really all you can ask for, you know. And that's what doing it as a team, doing it collectively, is what they're trying to get people to do in the country, you know, and just come together as a team because, you know, whether you like it or not, we're all here and we're not going anywhere, you know. So come together, have blind trust, like open minds, talk to each other and just listen, you know. And you might disagree, but we agree to disagree.
Yeah.
And that's what it is.
All right, we'll talk about that some more if you'd like. The phone line's open. We would love to get back to talking about the game, the Bills and the Broncos, and a lot more to talk about. So come on back. John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones talking about the game, talking about the pregame.
Trying to eat
some soup. Got a lot going on here. Hey, our Twitter poll today deals with the game yesterday, and we want to know what your biggest takeaway was from the Bills' 10-point victory over the Denver Broncos yesterday. What did you take away from that? You can ring us up at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550 and weigh in on that. Or you can vote in our Twitter poll right now on Twitter. 46% of you, almost half of you, say the biggest takeaway from the win was the way they took the ball away. 46% of you say that. 38% say the passing game, the success of the Buffalo passing game. 8% say special teams. 8% say something else. I would vote for the emergence of the passing game, Donald. I think that was critical. Yeah, the takeaways were key. The defense has been outstanding, just 2 touchdowns allowed in 3 games. But to fire the ball downfield with a certain degree, it was only, what, 218 yards passing for Tyrod? Okay, mm-hmm. Not great. But very high completion percentage. The passes that he hit over the middle were key, and they were clutch passes too. The touchdown to Charles Clay in particular stands out.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about a game where you had 6 guys that end up catching passes. You had 8 guys that got targeted yesterday, you know. So, and I've said this in the past, I think, and people won't like this, and I understand the talent that Sammy Watkins is, very good player when healthy. Tyrod Taylor, with the absence of Sammy Watkins, I think it can help Tyrod Taylor because I think he now has to spread the ball around to everybody, mm-hmm. you know, and he's not looking to. Now, when you have a number one dynamic wide receiver, yeah, he can make plays for you and change a game. But what happens when, you know, you're just always looking to that guy? There are other guys on the field that are open, you know, and so I think when now you are forced to spread the ball around because you don't have that necessarily at number one true dynamic wide receiver, it can help you as a quarterback. It can help you grow as a quarterback. And so now you see him. This is the second game where he's had like six or more guys catch passes, you know, this year, you know. So I think it's a good thing now that he's spreading the ball around to everybody.
Biggest takeaway from the win yesterday. Give us a call when we return after the top of the hour, 803-0550, the number, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or we'll take it on Twitter. We're going to hear some of the play calls and some of the big plays in yesterday's game and our game rewind segment coming up. And Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, standing by to join us as well. So come on back for Hour 3, the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Another victory Monday in One Bills Drive. A work day, though, under head coach Sean McDermott. Bills players here for conditioning and film review after they handled the Denver Broncos yesterday 26-16, picking up their second win of the season. Came out of the game without any serious injury concerns. Head coach Sean McDermott said defensive tackle Marcel Darius and left tackle Cordy Glenn, they will be monitored this week to see how much work they can get, maybe ready for the Atlanta Falcons. That's up next for the Bills. Last year's NFC champions at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta coming up on Sunday. Broncos linebacker Von Miller says he killed the game with his penalty, his unsportsmanlike penalty on the hit on Tyrod Taylor. He reached out his hand to offer Taylor assistance up and then pulled it away in a joking fashion, and both of them laughed. But he got a 15-yard penalty for unsportsmanlike conduct. The Bills' drive continued, and they went on to kick a field goal, go up by 10 points. Miller said, I brought us home 50 million times, close games. I've got to be smarter than that, though. He said, I just can't kill us. I killed the game today with that penalty. Von Miller said that. Eagles running back Darren Sproles, his season is over. He tore an ACL and broken arm on the same play yesterday for Philadelphia. Having surgery on his arm today, he will require surgery on his knee, and his season is over. Injured in the first half against the Giants following an awkward plant and a hit from Giants safety Darian Thompson. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell says he took pride in how the league and its players responded to the president's divisive comments about protests. In a show of unity, players across the league knelt, locked arms, raised their fist, even refused to come out of the locker room, joined by some coaches and even some owners. Goodell says this weekend, the way we reacted made me proud. And the Buffalo Sabres, after losing both of their preseason games against the Toronto Maple Leafs this past weekend by scores of 3-0 and 3-1, with two preseason games remaining, they play Wednesday night in Pittsburgh, Friday at home against the Islanders. 14 players assigned by the Sabres to the Rochester Americans over the weekend. And that is the sports update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones. Denver took a 3-0 lead into the second quarter. The Bills started deep in their own territory and had a third down at their own 30-yard line.
Tyrod back to throw. Fires over the middle. Caught on the run. Jordan Matthews at the 40, 45 midfield into Denver territory, and he is knocked out of bounds by Stewart, the safety. Jordan Matthews open over the middle. Tyrod found him, and the Bills pick up their first down of the game, a 28-yard completion. And back to throw. Tyrod steps up. Hit as he throws downfield. It was caught by Kalen Clay at the 17-yard line. Spins forward and brought down at the 12. Kalen Clay makes a play. Brandon Marshall brought him down. Gonna throw it. Looks to his left. Fires to the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown! No, they rule it incomplete. Oh, Mike Tolbert had it and could not hang on.
Did not finish the process of the catch. It is an incomplete pass.
Incomplete to Mike Tolbert. Now it is third and goal at the 2. Tyrod takes, fires into the end zone. The pass is caught for a touchdown. This one counts. Andre Holmes, touchdown on the tip pass on the back line of the end zone. The Bills take the lead.
The Broncos respond with a 79-yard drive, helped along by a couple of penalty calls. Denver had first down at the Bills' 12.
Shotgun snap. Simeon hands it off. Jamal Charles tries the middle. Finds some room. Still banging away. Heads to the end zone and he is in. Touchdown, Denver. 12-yard run by Jamal Charles, the 10-year veteran out of Texas. Good, tough run up the middle.
Broncos lead it 10-7. Later in the second quarter, Denver has to punt deep in their own territory from their 6-yard line.
Brandon Tate fields it at the Denver 48. Cuts to his left outside the numbers at the Denver 40. Down the sideline at the 35-30. And the Bills will get a great drive start. He is knocked out of bounds at about the 31-yard line. Brandon Tate, they were missing that last week. Snap is good. The ball is down. Hushkits kick. Looks long enough on the way, and it is good. and this game is tied.
An exchange of field goals has the Broncos on top 13-10. Buffalo gets the football with 42 seconds remaining, two timeouts to play, and a drive start in their own territory.
First down at the 40. Here's the snap. Taylor looks left, now fires over the middle again. It's McCoy again with a catch at midfield, and he is brought down at the Denver 49-yard line. And now Buffalo stops the clock with 16 seconds left in the first half. Taylor looks downfield, fires, caught by Charles Clay, and Clay carries a tackler forward down to the Denver 40-yard line. And the Bills stop the clock there with 12 seconds left. The snap is down. Hauschka's kick is on the way. It looks long enough. It is good. He makes it. He ties it up with 1 second left on the clock. Hauschka drills a 55-yard field goal.
13-all at the half. The Broncos get a third quarter field goal to go up by three. And so midway through the third quarter, the Bills start at their own 31-yard line.
Bootleg, left side, Tyron looks downfield, chucks it downfield, looking for O'Leary, makes a diving catch. Is it good? Yes, they rule it good at the Denver 38-yard line. Great catch by Nick O'Leary. And a big play for the Bills, 31 yards. High formation, DeMarco in front of Shady, play action fake. Taylor has time, fires it downfield, got Jordan Matthews at the 15 down the near sideline, shoved out of bounds, first down Buffalo. They'll have it inside the 10-yard line, all the way down to the 6. That's a 25-yard pickup. So they're going to throw it again off play action. Tyrod takes a look, finds a man open. Touchdown, Charles Clay. Touchdown, Buffalo. The Bills back on top. A 6-yard touchdown toss from Tyrod Taylor to Charles Clay in the end zone.
69 yards in four plays. Buffalo takes the lead 20-16. They kick it off to the Broncos, who have a second down and long at their own 12-yard line.
Four-man rush. Simeon sets up the throw. Now pocket collapse, and he has to dart back to his left. Looks downfield, fires downfield. It is picked off by E.J. Gaines at the 32-yard line. He goes down there. Intercepted by the Bills. They get the takeaway they needed from E.J. Gaines.
The Bills with a four-point lead late in the third quarter. Denver lines up in punt formation at their own 31-yard line.
And it's a fake. And the Bills stop the fake. They stop them short at the 31-yard line, right at the line of scrimmage. D'Angelo Henderson stopped by Deion Lacey, of all people, and they are celebrating on special teams. Snap is good. The ball is down. Hauschka's kick is on the way. Drifting to the right. It is up. It is good. He did it again. Steven Hauschka gives the Bills a 7-point lead.
It's 23-16. The Bills on top early in the fourth quarter. The Broncos move downfield. They're looking at a first down at the Buffalo 24.
Trevor Siemian lines him up, shotgun, fakes a handoff to Charles, pressured, fires it, intercepted, picked off by Tre'Davious White at the Buffalo 30, weaving through traffic. They finally bring him down at the 38-yard line. Tre'Day, Tre'Davious White with a huge interception.
Game Rewind, some of the big calls from yesterday's win over the Denver Broncos. Game Rewind presented by Toshiba, the official copier company of the Buffalo Bills. John Murphy, Donald Jones, Chris Brown from BuffaloBills.com, Bills Insider, joins us. You're welcome to join us as well. Phone lines open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Chris, our Twitter poll today, let's get you in on that. What is your biggest takeaway, no pun intended, from yesterday's victory over the Denver Broncos? What do you take away from that game yesterday? Anything on our menu of Twitter selections?
I would go passing game.
Me too.
Because without it, they don't win. They don't win the game if they don't have a competent passing game, because the run game was shut down. And that was the answer that I think the majority of the fans that called into this show last week on the heels of the Carolina game and probably just out there in the general public wanted to see. Is this passing game going to be up to snuff to do enough offensively to put points on the board when opponents key on LeSean McCoy? And I think they did do enough yesterday, and I think we couple the credit between, you know, execution by the players and Coach Dennison putting together a pretty darn good game plan. The thing that most impressed me about Dennison's plan was he actually played off what has been the identity of this offense and threw a curveball at the Broncos, because a lot of his personnel groupings said run.
Yeah.
And he used pass plays off of that, assuming Denver would anticipate run. The O'Leary play, that's 13 personnel.
Yeah.
You've got three tight ends on the field, and you're in your own half. It's first and 10. Everything in the universe says the Bills are running the football.
Including all of your tendencies.
And they run a 31-yard pass play, which was really well executed. I mean, Tyrod rolling to his left, throwing across his body, floating it up. I thought that was a great touch pass by Tyrod to just drop it there. And then O'Leary, you know, getting his knees down. He didn't even get his toes down because he was laying out for it. And Tyrod's touch pass to Jordan Matthews with a man coming in his face in the red zone there was another great play by him. But then the other play is 22 personnel on the field. You got Tolbert and DeMarco in the backfield. And it winds up being a pass play, not to DeMarco out of the backfield, who went to the Pro Bowl catching passes out of the backfield from the Falcons. They throw it to Tolbert, which is ready to be a touchdown if he can hang on and complete the catch. They had the play there to be made. They just didn't execute it. But I thought that was another great play call by Dennison when everything in the universe says they're running the ball here first and goal.
I thought he did break the plane, by the way, and looked at it again on video today, Tolbert. But, okay, I get that.
Yeah.
So if you can pass the ball that well, why weren't they able to run the ball? That was what we all talked about last week. Use the passing game to open things up for the run game a little bit.
You're just going against a great defensive front against the run. I mean, they've been in the top five against the run, I think, three of the last 4 years. You're playing a front that's really, really, really good, who I think got even better with the addition of Pecco in the middle there on rundowns. It's just going to be tough sledding all the way out. Plus, you don't have your left tackle. So, you know, I just think it was going to be – tough sledding, not only in week two. I thought it was going to be much the same in week three for their run game. That's why it was so critical for the pass game to make some hay this week.
I still think that teams will key in on LeSean McCoy, and they will force the Bills to have to play like they played yesterday. You have to be creative. You have to use different personnels, all of that stuff to beat us. And if your wide receivers can beat our corners, we'll live with that, you know. But they will not allow – they know what they have in LeSean McCoy.
Yeah.
But they will not allow for – LeSean McCoy to get loose. They will say, you know what, beat us through the air with these wide receivers and your tight ends.
The good thing, though, is coming out of this game, you know, even though they didn't roll up a 300-yard passing day or, you know, five passing touchdowns, Dennison's play calling coupled with the players' execution in the pass game has given future opponents enough to think about where they can't just say, we stop McCoy, we win the game.
As far as LeSean McCoy, Sean McDermott was asked about him an hour ago when he met with the media. Here's his comments when he was asked about the troubles that McCoy has had the last couple of games now in getting the run game going.
Yeah, they're crowding the box quite a bit. I mean, it's a healthy respect for LeSean. And so, you know, you saw that really pretty much after the Jets game, and Carolina did that. And then we saw that yesterday from Denver. And that's where we have to spread the ball around. And I thought we did a nice job of that. Tyrod did a good job of that. And using Charles Clay, you know, getting the different receivers involved with Jordan Matthews and Kalen Clay yesterday, you know, as well. So that was good to see.
Sean McDermott yesterday. Let's take some calls on the Bills' performance. Chris Brown is in studio with us, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com. Nick waiting patiently, calling from North Carolina. Hi, Nick. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hey, good morning, guys. Is that Mr. Steve Pastor that I hear?
No, Chris Brown.
Chris Brown is with us.
Oh, I'm sorry
to disappoint you.
really quick, I just want to say two things. I'll get off the air and I'll listen. The first thing is I think something clicked yesterday between this offense and Tyrod. I don't know what it was, but if you saw the first couple of series or three and out punt, I'm thinking this is the same offense we saw in Carolina. The light bulb went on. I don't know what it is, but I think it's something that you're going to see from here on out. And, you know, coupled with our defense, I think you're looking at a 10-6, 7-5 season. And the other thing I want to say real quick is Sammy Watkins has to be the most overrated wide receiver in the NFL. This dude is a ghost for the first two games with the Rams, and he puts up a 100-and-some yards against the San Francisco 49ers, and everyone's calling him the next Julio Jones. This guy is the most overrated wide receiver in the NFL, and I am glad that he's out of Buffalo.
Okay.
Up now, and hey, Chris Brown, you guys rock.
Thanks, Nick.
That's how you end that call, Nick.
He slammed the phone down.
Yeah, right. Dropped the mic.
He was talking about what clicked. You know, it took a while to get it took a while to get the offense clicking, Chris. And I look back at those almost almost back to back. They were two plays apart, 28-yard passes over the middle where Tyrod is supposed to struggle. Jordan Matthews and two plays later, Kalen Clay, 28 yards each. Buffalo's first scoring drive, the Andre Holmes touchdown. I think that's what clicked. That was early in the second quarter.
Right, and I think also what helps this passing game is the fact that he's got two security blankets in LeSean McCoy and Charles Clay.
Yeah,
those two guys are targeted an awful lot, and it's not by accident. Mm-hmm. And it's not always for a ton of yardage, but it's enough to, in this case this week, substitute for the running game. I mean, you look at the yardage for Clay and for McCoy, it's only 48 and 39 yards respectively, but that's 80-some-odd yards that got taken away in the run game. You apply that, you know, with a short passing attack, using those guys for the most part as safety valves. I mean, Clay, even on his touchdown, was the third progression in the play. I mean, Tyrod told us yesterday, my option to run even came before Clay.
Mm-hmm.
It basically was corner route to Matthews, run, Clay as a last resort option, you know, leaking out late over the middle. And I just think it's an example of giving Tyrod comfort options in guys that he implicitly trusts with high percentage type throws. And I think, you know, going against this Atlanta defense, which is really, really fast, granted they don't have Vic Beasley, who's out with the torn hamstring, so that's a help. But this is a fast defense, a lot in the mold of Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to need some of these safety valve options with the way Atlanta's defenders are able to get to spots on the field and close space so quickly. There's a very good chance this week that, you know, progression one and progression two are going to be covered up in the Bills passing game this week, and he's going to need his safety valve guys, you know, LeSean over here swinging out of the backfield, or Clay coming underneath and scraping free at late in the play. He's going to need those guys to keep the passing game going, especially if the run game gets shut down again.
You know, it's tough when you can't get the run game going, but this is why I always say move LeSean McCoy around and get him the ball. He is a playmaker. And they had, I believe it was a third and long. They throw it like a straight now route out to LeSean McCoy, a bad pass too, where he had to jump up and catch it. He turns that thing into a first down because he is a weapon. And I'm like, I mean, it was like three people closing in on him, and he turns that thing into a first down. This is why you have to move him around. You have to move Charles Clay around and be creative in everything that you are doing. That's how this team, this offense, if it wants to be successful, you will have to move everybody around to ease people back off, and then your run game can get going. But you got to be creative. You can't, and I know Coach Dennison was criticized for the Carolina game, but like Chris, like Brownie just said, you know, you look to the Jets game and how creative they were. The Panthers game, maybe not as creative. And then you look at yesterday, those are like three totally different offenses now that they've run. So Atlanta, really, what are they going to do? We don't know what they're going to do.
There's a call from Rick in Albany. Hello, Rick. Welcome. Go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hey, thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I just want to play off what everybody's been playing on. I called it in way before you guys started talking. I'm like, hey, darn it, you're taking away what I'm talking about. My thing is, my twist on it is, though, is beginning of the game. You guys mentioned before that it was 3-and-out, 3-and-out, 3-and-out. And it took – they just kept running the ball. And they were doing some passes, but they weren't really discrete passes. But why can't we have an offense that starts off with a pass and try to loosen up that box, everybody beginning in the box right off the bat, instead of just waiting – for the third or fourth series to, this ain't working, so let's try something different, you know? So it's really distinctive because it's the running game will be there, but everybody knows it. Everybody knows it. I mean, I bet you 3-year-olds know that the way the Buffalo is going to run the game, play the game is run with the run. Why not just try with the pass and see how far that goes and give it to people like Zay Jones with short routes or a slant inside or a slant going towards the sidelines a little bit more.
Right. I haven't looked through every first down yet, but, I mean, the second series they started with a pass to LeSean McCoy over the middle.
I thought they worked play action more effectively too.
Yeah.
To play off their own tendencies to run the football. So, I think part of why – Coach Dennison was as conservative as he was in week two was rooted in the fact that it might be the fastest defense front to back in the league. Atlanta might be right up there with them. Because if you think about the NFC South, it's chock full of solid quarterbacks. I mean, mm-hmm. you're talking Drew Brees, Matt Ryan, and then you got Cam Newton and Jameis Winston. Yep. So those teams have to be fast.
Yeah.
They have to play good pass defense and get to places on the field and cover. So by nature, they're built to be very fast. And so I think Coach Dennison, knowing how the passing game is still in its infancy stages with all the guys late to the party due to trades or off-season additions or what have you, or injury in the case of Tyrod right before the regular season started, didn't want to roll out some elaborate passing game type game plan, not to mention the fact that he knew that the slightest mistake or the slightest bit of being off in execution, Carolina's coming the other way with a pick. So I think that's why he was hesitant to kind of put all the cards on the table. I think he felt a little bit more comfortable with this Denver defense, maybe not on the back end where their corners are still all world, but that second level there, Von Miller's a great pass rusher, but he's not helping them in coverage. Mm-hmm. And the other linebackers aren't nearly as fast as Carolina's linebackers when it comes to coverage assignments. So I think that's why he felt a little bit more comfortable to make some more plays, be a little bit more creative in the passing game. So, Will, where do we go next week with an Atlanta defense that's every bit as fast? I mean, we're talking Deion Jones, guys like that that can really, really run.
Yeah.
Do we go back to what we saw in week two? Boy, I don't know. Atlanta gave up a lot of points last week and even mm-hmm. the week before. Mm-hmm. They haven't really shown a great ability to stop people on a regular basis. So maybe they're just by virtue of the fact that they haven't been all that successful on defense will give Dennison and Tyrod Taylor the confidence to kind of keep the playbook open and go to a variety of options. That's really what I'm interested to see this week, maybe more than anything else.
Hey, Brownie, you feel like yesterday in the second half after a turnover – you get the ball twice in great, great field position. Did you feel like he was a little bit conservative then?
I think you can make that argument. I had my wife and my son texting me during the game, why are we still running the ball? And I was like, holy cow.
You know? Like separately text, separate text?
I got two different texts.
They're sitting together. Yeah. You text them and I'm going to text them.
Were they at the game? Or were
they were at the game.
And
yeah.
They're texting you in the middle of the game.
Yeah, well, they also asked me to bring water down for them too. Because it's just, you know, the requests I get during the game, it's like, I am trying to work here. You know? It's like, but
I am a division manager.
But I think – but
I drive a Dodge Stratton.
That's right. But I think that, I think what we've got here is a special circumstance. And what I mean by that is I was talking to Stephen Hauschka after the game because, you know, here's a guy that kicks a 53-yarder and a 55-yarder, and he made it look easy.
Mm-hmm.
His swing was just on yesterday, and he told me, you know, with the weather being as warm as it is, naturally the ball's going to fly further. I mean, it's all pumped up and ready to go. I mean, when you hear about guys love going to play the Texas Rangers down in Texas in baseball because it carries so well because it's so dang humid and hot down there, mm-hmm. the ball just flies out of the park. Well, I think it was the same kind of thing for Hauschka yesterday. And I asked him, I said, what was the limit you gave coach before the game? And he said, well, going down the end where I kick most of my field goals, the scoreboard end, the line was 58 yards.
Yeah.
He said the other way it was about 63, 64.
Yeah, he told me that.
And I was like, what? 64?
Yeah.
But when it's that hot and the ball's flying that far and he's swinging and feeling that good, that's the difference. And I think that has an impact on a head coach on how they want to call the plays. I'm up 7. I just got to get close enough to make this a 2-score game and kick a field goal here. And my kicker's feeling great mm-hmm. and can hit it from 58. I'm not going to go for all the marbles here. I'm just going to play safe football. My defense is doing well. So I understand why you have – I said it too. Let's go for the throat here. But that's not how head coaches think in the NFL, right or wrong. And in the and you got to – as a coach, you're always got to mitigate the risk. Mm-hmm. It's time and score and how his team's performing in that moment. And in that moment, yes, they were moving the ball, but their kicker was playing lights out. And you know, I think that had an impact on his thinking.
Yeah, and the two possessions you're talking about, Donald, one started at the Denver 32 after the interception, right? I'm looking at it here, after the Gaines interception. First play, McCoy runs 12 yards to the 14-yard line, and Richie gets called for holding.
Yep.
A questionable call, by the way.
Yeah.
His arm was out there. I don't know if he held anything. And the next time, and this is where I think Brownie's scenario comes into play, they started at the 31, knew they were already right in field goal range, and knew that a field goal would put them up by seven, and played it that way.
Yeah, that holding call was tough. I mean, it's questionable if it was a
call
or not.
This is why they tell offensive linemen to keep their hands, you know,
inside.
In the
yeah,
right, exactly.
As soon as you put a hand on a shoulder,
right, they're
going
to call it.
Right.
But that one hurt because he takes that thing all the way down to what,
14-yard line.
Right.
First and 10 at the 14.
And now it gets called back. And now the coach gets into mode like, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Don't want to come out of here empty.
That'll change a coach's thinking even faster than how well your kicker's kicking.
Yeah. Right.
Well, you can stick for a few more minutes, Chris?
Probably a couple here, depending on how early Coach Dennison wants to go.
Yeah, we're going to try to pick up Coach Rick Dennison, too, as he addresses the media. We think around 2:45, but come on back for more. We'll get your phone calls on the air for Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. We're just talking here, and myself and Donald Jones and Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com. We hope to pick up
Is that the show within the show?
Yeah. Yeah. Best part of the show is a commercial break sometimes.
Is it always like that for you in the media?
Yes, pretty much. Okay. Yep. Rick Dennison, Bills offensive coordinator, will be standing before the media in about 10 minutes or so. We will try to carry that live for you if the timing works out. In the meantime, talking to Chris Brown about yesterday's game, a call here from Michael in his car. Hello, Michael. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, Murph. Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
First of all, listening to this show today, trade day, you got to get that call trademarked, Murph.
Actually, Michael, let's just put this out there. I'm the one that came up with that. Murph stole it.
Oh, then you got to get that call trademarked then before Murph steals it from you.
It's already stolen. It's gone.
You got to spell trademark, T-R-E, apostrophe. Yeah.
And the reason why, trademark. I mean, it's, Donald, thank you for that. It was your idea. It also harkens back to one of the great iconic calls in Buffalo sports history, Rick Jeanneret.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid to steal material. I do it all the time.
We all do it.
And that's why I thought of it too. But two reasons why I'm calling today. One, I wanted to hear you guys take on Deion Dawkins, obviously filling in for Cordy Glenn, having a productive day at O-line. And then another position that I really thought played out well yesterday for the Bills was the passing game. Tyrod played great. But the main reason why I called, and this is I heard in the press conference earlier with Coach Chris, I think it might have been you actually asking the question. You said for those that have kids at home, is this a teaching point for you? Do you teach your kids to either look at this in one way, look at it in another way? But for guys that are out on the field making millions of dollars a year, being role models to kids, obviously politics and football up until this year, I feel, have never really meshed together, and now it's all playing out as one. I wanted to get your guys' take on that because I just feel like that these guys are role models to so many people in this world, in this country, and you got to stand as one for your country, even regardless of who's in office. And I just wanted to hear what you guys had to say about that.
Donald, you have talked before, and I do agree with you on this, Donald. The money doesn't really matter how much money you make. It's not
right.
You don't surrender your First Amendment rights or any rights when you make a lot of money.
It doesn't matter how much money you make. It what matters is your personal beliefs and who you are as a person, you know. And if you feel a certain way, which players are people too, they play football on TV, that's one side of them. But they are really people with families. They have gone through things. They still go through things, even though they actually make a lot of money. And they feel a certain way about how things are happening. And this is – it doesn't matter, white, black, it doesn't matter. They feel a certain way about how, you know, people are treated in this country, and they're going to speak up about it. They have a platform, and they feel like this is the platform that they want to use, and that's what they're doing.
That was not your question, by the way.
It was not my question. You know, and I get what he's saying, you know, politics and sports, and you hear the old adage, you know, athletes should stick to sports, but I don't think that applies here. And, you know, Lorenzo Alexander, I thought, explained it very well yesterday in the locker room after the game when he basically said people criticize us for being guys who make a lot of money and then stand up and talk about people that aren't treated equally. And he says, we have to do that because of the platform and the exposure that we do have, so we can be a voice for the people that don't have one.
Exactly.
And that's That's really the point here. So people that get offended by the choice they make in terms of when to demonstrate during the anthem, or people that get bent out of shape because it's a millionaire taking that kind of stand, and you should be grateful that you can make that kind of money in a country like this. I think they are, but I think they have the presence of mind to think about someone besides themselves, mm-hmm. which you should probably tip your hat to. That you know, they could sit in their big house high on the hill and not worry about anybody else, and stay within their little circle now that they've made it, you know. But they choose not to. They choose to speak up for those that don't have a voice, don't have a platform to say, hey, this isn't right. We're in 2017, and this is the situation that we're witnessing on national news, nightly news. It's backwards, and it's got to get fixed. They may not have all the answers, but they at least want to draw awareness to that. And I think the biggest thing that people miss, that get bent out of shape about this, is they're worried about their personal feelings being offended with respect to the flag, the military, whatever their issue is with the way these anthem protests are going. They're not stopping for a second, putting their personal feelings aside and saying, why are they doing this? And I think if people just stop and say, why are they doing this, and actually engage in conversation and get some answers, they may better understand. You still may not agree with why they're demonstrating, where the path they choose to demonstrate, mm-hmm. but you may understand better why they're demonstrating, and that's really what you're after here. Stimulate the conversation, understand it better. You don't have to agree, but just understand it.
You know, I just want to say that, and I understand people's thoughts on the flag and the military. And the number one thing is these players, I would almost guarantee most, if not all, of these players in this league have family members that were in the military or family members that are policemen. You know, this is not about the flag. It's not about the military. And they're not trying to disrespect the country, okay? They are trying to simply bring light to something that has been going on for a long time. And like Chris said, they have a platform, they have a voice, and they are trying to use that platform and their voice to express something, because you have so many people that don't have that.
And there was a clever tweet that I saw from a reporter, I can't remember the paper, you know, from another NFL city, and he basically said that equating the players' protests to being disrespectful to the military is like saying Rosa Parks is being disrespectful to public transportation. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of where we're going, I think, to a certain extent with that. I mean, they've tried to tell people time and again it's not about that. I understand the connection that people who are upset are making there, and it's a logical connection, but they're telling you it's not. And I think you have to take some blind faith here and take them at their word on that, because for them there's a bigger issue at stake, and that's why they feel compelled to do it at that particular time.
Chris, we're going to let you go. Thank you very much. Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com. Look for his brownie points on the website
tomorrow. Yeah, we'll have him going. Brownie plenty of candidates.
Do you have any suggestions?
No suggestions. He'll figure it out. There's enough good things going on there. Eric Wood, Bills captain, Bills center, speaking to the podium over in the media area right now. Let's listen in for a moment.
Yeah, it's kind of fighting fire with fire. And, you know, the president is polarizing. He used that language at a rally, and you know, I don't know if it was calculated or not, but he said it, and guys took strong offense to it. And as a player that's not as affected by the issues and had never thought about taking a knee, and I wouldn't, it made me even feel a certain type of way. Like, he's attacking the NFL community, and there's a lot of backlash, stick to football. And I get that, but then on Tuesdays, when you have tons of players out in the community, and so many of us have foundations that try and do so much outside of football, man, I would be weary to say, hey, guys, only stick to football, because there's a ton of good that comes about the work we do in the community. So I get it. Guys don't want to hear what we have to say on a political basis. I get it. But we also have a lot of intelligent men on our team that if they weren't in a football uniform, they'd probably be speaking their mind and highly successful in anything they're doing anyways, and their voice would be heard. But like I said, it's just a really controversial, polarizing time for us.
Eric, is this something that, know, ironically, how divisive the issue can be, it really can bring you guys together. Maybe it didn't bring you guys even closer together than what I think seems like an already tight group on Saturday night.
Yeah, you know, I got to hear, you know, why guys wanted to take a knee. And other guys said, you know, I'm not going to take a knee. Like, we're not all going to take a knee together because I, you know, I almost feel like for some people, taking a knee would have almost been offensive to the people who had felt social inequality in their life. I hope that helps.
Morning, specifically about Shady, said he lost respect for Shady. Also said that if you don't like this country, you should leave.
Honestly, there hasn't been a whole lot of discussion about it. We've been working kind of since we've been in here. I'd imagine those discussions will kind of come about. Not a whole lot's been said about it at this point. You know, I have a lot of respect for Jim, and Shady's very intelligent. I think you know. If it needed to happen, they could probably have a conversation and see more eye to eye on the subject.
Do you think that does need to happen? Because you've got Jim Kelly, a sort of a legend of this organization, still an employee of it and a face of the team, openly going against this message of unity and love and equality by saying that he lost respect for perhaps your most important player.
Yeah, potentially. You know, if there's going to continue to be. If this is going to continue to be an issue, then maybe those discussions would need to happen for sure.
Eric, what was the symbolism? And I apologize if I'm wasting the last question. What was the symbolism of walking out onto the field? You guys, I think, were the only you made it a point to do that. When you decided, okay, this is what we're going to do, what were the, you know, the levels of the message you were trying to get out?
We walked out on the field the first game, too, and kind of got together in the end zone. And that stems back to we wanted, this year especially, we wanted to come together. There was a lot of talk of us tanking and whatnot, and we wanted to show, like, we're going to fight together. This is the closest team I've been on. Coaches made calculated steps to get it to this point. Where guys, it's been talked about, guys talk about their family in front of the room, be very vulnerable with each other. We've become closer. Well, we didn't want to do the individual introductions, and then we didn't do it for one of the preseason games at home. We all kind of ran out, and it was kind of sporadic. And Coach showed us a video of a Super Bowl where the AFC representative team kind of came out together, walking out, and they were all together, and it was awesome, and we're like, that's what we want to do. And it kind of has evolved into us kind of jumping in the end zone, and Tolbert gets down and comes out.
But then the anthem, you guys all walked out together, which a lot of teams, most teams stayed on the side. You know, generally you stay on the sideline.
Right.
You guys made it a point to walk out onto the field. What was the reason for that?
I think it was to get everybody together. I'm not 100% sure to answer your question, honestly. Right before the national anthem was going to be played, messages were getting relayed down the sideline. Everybody take a few steps forward onto the field.
Eric Wood, Bills Center, addressing the media over in the media center. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more of the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Just a couple of minutes back for today's show. We're back on the air tomorrow at 12 noon, and on the show tomorrow, Thurman Thomas will join us, Bills Hall of Fame running back, to get his take on the Bills' offensive production yesterday, what they can do to get the running game going a little bit. Also on tomorrow's show, on Tuesdays, who do we – oh, Trey Wingo from
Trey
ESPN.
Wingo.
Yeah. Trey Wingo will join us for a league-wide look at, obviously, some of the big news items around the National Football League. Bills offense coordinator Rick Dennison meeting with the media right now. Let's listen in.
Well, of course, it's important. You got to be able to do both run and pass. And we just keep working on our techniques, fundamentals, make sure we get them in the right spot. You know, having a bunch of guys down there helped our passing game. So they work together. But we'll keep working on it. We have a lot of faith and confidence in our guys up front and our ball carriers.
Yeah, Sean says they're really stacking the box, which is what we saw in Carolina and then again in Denver. How do you counter that and maybe break that up and find some lanes?
Well, that's what helps the play action and the boots. And if they're down in there, then they're not deep. So you counteract it by throwing it over their heads, which we made some explosive plays yesterday, and hopefully we'll keep doing that and get a chance to get a hat on a hat in the box and let our runners run also.
What did it do for you to see a game where the running game did get shut down, but you were able to move the ball and put up points without?
Well, it's not like it hasn't happened before. I've had that before. I'm comfortable with our wideouts. Obviously, have a lot of confidence in our quarterback. And our running game, I think we'll be fine. I knew it, just persistence is our biggest thing. We just keep working at it. Our guys are resilient. There was nobody blinked on the sideline. They just kept grinding, knowing that somebody will make a play here or there. So I feel confident we'll just keep going back to work on our techniques in the run game and get some schemes going. And Juan and I will get together. We'll make sure we get the guys in the right spot.
Coach, Sean talked about lack of finish after the Jets game. Get you one. And what concerns do you have about lack of finish after these past two games? And yesterday when you came away with 6 points, it's like starting inside the 35 three times.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that we got to make sure that, we're not satisfied with three. We're getting sevens. And, that's on me, too. I got to make sure I get them in the right spot. That's one of the things that we've, as a staff, as an offensive staff, we're gonna make sure we have in those spots, those areas, the strike zone, we call it, that we're thinking explosive plays, not just making sure we get threes.
All right, Rick Dennison, we are out of time today. We are back tomorrow with the show. Donald and I will be back. Want to thank our crew, including J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Olivia Merrill, our producer Jay Harris. We'll see you tomorrow at noon with the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.